Hey guys, before we get started with today's episode, we have a few housekeeping announcements. Today's episode is our 10th main episode of Crime Scenes, and we've mentioned this before, but this is going to be the finale for season one. We are still going to have a follow-up mini episode to this movie, but this is the last main episode. We already have all the movies lined up that we plan to watch for our season two episodes, and these are all requests from our listeners. So if you are a listener and you did send in a request, thank you so, so much. We really appreciate it. We do promise that we're going to get to all of them. We're excited that we finally made it to the end of season one, and we are really excited to get started on season two. All right, let's get to the show. Thanks, guys. I have an important question for you. How many Lowe's could a Rob Lowe rob if a Rob Lowe could rob Lowe's? That is so hard to say. Hi, everyone. I'm Bolton.
And I'm Grace.
And welcome to Crime Scenes, a true crime movie podcast,
where we watch and recap movies that are based on true crimes while also giving you the inside scoop on what really happened.
What movie are we doing today, Grace?
Drew Peterson, Untouchable.
If you would like to make a request, you can do so by sending us a DM through any of our social medias. We are at Crime Scenes Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can also make a movie request on our website, crimescenespodcast.com.
All right, let's get into the movie and the real story.
Stacy Peterson, the young Illinois mother, vanished last October.
Results of the autopsy came back with the cause of death being accidental drowning.
Her husband, Drew Peterson, is now considered a suspect.
He needs to be arrested.
Anytime you're under a microscope, people only want to see the negative. They knew the facts about me. They would know that there's no way that I could be involved in any crime.
Drew Peterson, Untouchable, on Lifetime.
Before we get into the details of today's movie, we just wanted to talk about the fact that Alan C. Logan, the author of the book that we used extensively as a source in our episode about Catch Me If You Can, wrote to us, and we both about died. Somehow, he happened to hear the episode, and he liked it. And apparently, Paula Parks or some of her family heard some of it as well, and they seemed to like it too. We were, like, so excited. It felt like we got an A-plus on a really important project or something. So thank you so much. And thank you to all of our listeners. We get really happy when we hear from people. It makes us feel like we're actually doing something worth listening to.
Definitely.
Moving right along, for this movie, Drew Peterson Untouchable, you can watch this if you have a subscription to Philo or the Lifetime app. And if you do not have a subscription to either one of those, you can get a 7-day free trial. And then after that, the Philo is going to be $25 a month and the Lifetime app is $3.99. And unfortunately, you cannot rent this movie anywhere. But if you feel so inclined, you can buy it for $12.99 on YouTube TV, Google Play, and Amazon Prime. Or you can buy it for $13.99 on Vudu. It's pretty entertaining. I definitely bought it, so it's fine. This movie is starring Rob Lowe, Kaley Cuoco, Catherine Dent, and Cara Buono. It was directed by Mikkel Salomon, and the writing credits for this are kind of weird. In the movie and on IMDb, it says that the screenplay was written by Tina Booth, and then IMDb has two other people credited for the writing of this. The first one is Joseph Hosey, and he was actually the author of a book called Fatal Vows, The Tragic Wives of Sergeant Drew Peterson. And apparently this movie was based on that book. And then the other person that is given credit in this is none other than Drew Peterson himself. And this is so problematic, you will see why, but I can't even believe that it's on there. I don't know why it's on there, but it is. So this is already going to be very interesting, and we haven't even gotten into the movie.
Yeah, super crazy.
This film is based on the true story of Drew Peterson, a womanizing Bolingbrook police officer who is charged with the death of his third wife after the mysterious disappearance of his fourth wife. If you can't tell already, he gets married a lot, so we are going to clarify all the wives. Sources for this episode are going to be the movie itself, Drew Peterson, Untouchable, which was made in 2012. And then I briefly went through Joseph Hosey's book, Fatal Vows, The Tragic Wives of Sergeant Drew Peterson. And I initially wasn't planning to read it, not because it's not accurate. It does have a lot of good information in there. And Joseph Hosey was actually able to interview Drew Peterson. But this book was published on February 16th, 2009. And Drew Peterson was not even arrested and charged with the murder of his third wife until May 7th. And we didn't even get a verdict until September 6th. 6th, 2012. So it was published early on. And Joseph Hosey, this author slash reporter, contributes to a lot of the other sources we use. So we used those a lot more than his book, but I did still look at it. And it is good. If you want to look at it, just know that it ends pretty early on. The other things I looked at were an ID Channel special called Drew Peterson, An American Murder Mystery, Marcia Clark Investigates the First 48, the podcast, and then I know Grace also looked at the TV series for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched an episode of the show on Lifetime called Cellmate Secrets, Season 1, Episode 2, titled Drew Peterson. And then I also listened to several podcasts. I already mentioned the Marcia Clark one. Then I also listened to the podcast Going West and another podcast called Love Murder.
And I found a lot of Chicago Tribune articles because this case took place in Illinois. So the Chicago Tribune's coverage of the case was really heavy.
So a few things about this movie before we start. This is kind of a spoiler alert, but honestly, there's so many things that happen in this case. It's not really. Drew Peterson is going to go on trial for the death of his third wife, Kathleen Sabio. And kind of like the book that it's based on, Fatal Vows, by the time this movie aired on January 21st, 2012, he had not gone to that trial yet. Fortunately for us, a lot of the information revealed in the movie actually ends up being evidence or testimony at the trial. And at the end of the recap, we're going to talk about the results of the trial, and we're also going to give some other updates. So if there's any remaining information or testimony, we'll talk about it then. The other thing about this movie is it is our first Lifetime movie.
I love a Lifetime movie.
I do too, but here's the thing. If you've not seen a Lifetime movie before, it is an acquired taste. They are just one of those things. They're made for TV. The directing and writing are not spectacular. And yeah, you have a couple of big names in this, but they are clearly there for the paycheck. So needless to say, there is a lot you can very easily make fun of just in the movie itself. However, we want to make very clear that we are very aware this is a real story that happened to real people. And we want to be very sure that we are respectfully telling the story of these women and what happened to them, because it is very serious and it needs to be told. And actually, there are parts of the movie that we both agree do not portray these women well. And so we want to clarify that and make sure that they are portrayed fairly on this episode. So with that being said, we are now going to get into this.
All right. So the movie opens with an aerial view of a news studio, and we get our first on-screen text for this movie. And it says, based on a true story. Rob Lowe is playing Drew Peterson, and he's joking about how there's a rumor going around that they want him to do a Playgirl shoot.
I lost 20 pounds. Danny Craig doesn't have anything on me. It's for my Playgirl shoot.
What did he put it down?
No, that's one of the rumors I heard, that I was going to do that.
And then one of the next things that Drew Peterson says to the reporter is that he is the most researched man in America.
I was doing some research on you last night.
I'm the most researched man in America. I have a wife run off, and I'm interesting.
Oh, you are interesting. Believe me.
So, Drew, Stacy was your fourth wife. You've really been married that many times?
That's right.
Such bad luck with wives. Why do you keep doing it?
You like vanilla, I like chocolate, I like being married. I like to belong to somebody. And, you know, I'm romantic.
And to me, this really gives us this idea that Drew Peterson has a grandiose sense of self. He doesn't seem to equate that the research people are doing about him is because he's scary. It's more like everybody's so interested in me.
Yeah.
He also thinks all the ladies think he's hot, which I don't know how he gets this sense of confidence, but somehow he does.
Actually, in real life, when he found out they were making this movie, it was originally called Lady Killer.
Oh, God. I'm so glad they did not name it that. That's insane.
I know. He sent a cease and desist letter because he didn't want them to make the movie. And they ended up being able to do it, but they did have to change the name. And honestly, he better be thanking his lucky stars they chose Rob Lowe to play him, because that was doing him several favors.
Yeah. They make Rob Lowe look very bad, and he still does not look bad enough to look like the real Drew Peterson. He's got this gross mustache, and he's got a little belly.
Yeah. He's got this gray hair, and it's a wig, and it is sitting 3 inches off of his head. It's quite ridiculous. Like, the makeup in this, they had to be doing this on purpose.
But so the reporter asked him,
what's so great about marriage?
Honeymoons.
Okay. And Kathleen Savio was wife number three.
Beautiful girl. And fun. We laughed, did some comedy between us. And then, of course, she changed.
How long did the honeymoon last with her?
Not long enough. The honeymoons never last long enough.
And that's one of our first foreshadowing moments. And in the movie, they're going to jump back and forth between this interview scene and the actual storyline as it plays out. For clarity in this episode, we're not going to come back to this interview. I also couldn't find if this was based on a specific interview that Drew did, but he did a lot of media interviews before he was arrested. So the Lifetime movie people had lots of material to choose from to base this off of.
Yeah. Before we go into the next scene in the movie, I wanted to talk a little bit about Drew Peterson's background and a little bit about all the marriages he had up until this point, because they all show different aspects of Drew Peterson that are important for realizing what a douchebag he is. Drew Peterson was born in 1954 in the suburbs of Chicago. He actually was from Bolingbrook, where this whole story takes place. And Drew Peterson seemed to do really well. He did well in school. He ran cross country. And I don't know why, but every source about his background all seemed to think it's really neat that at 17, he got his pilot's license, which I can take or leave. But people were very into that about him. That was a big thing. But his dad was apparently a former Marine and incredibly strict with him. And I kind of wanted to see if anything about Drew Peterson's background said if there was any abuse in his household, because I just can't imagine this guy turned out the way he did without there being some sort of abuse there. But I didn't find anything. The fact that they keep saying his dad was very strict, I think speaks a lot. And I have a feeling there was more going on there than meets the eye.
Yeah.
So Drew ends up taking a young girl named Carol Brown to homecoming, and they start dating. He considers her his high school sweetheart. And then in 1974, when he was 20 years old and she was 17, they get married. And he ends up joining the Army. He actually moved to Virginia to do his training, and then he was in the military police. And then eventually he moves back home and he joins the police force in Bolingbrook, Illinois. During this time, they also had two boys, one named Eric, one named Steven, but they are going to get divorced in 1980. And the main reason cited here was Carol found out that he was cheating on her, and he'd been cheating a lot, and she was pregnant. So she was not going to deal with this anymore.
Yeah.
Another reason cited is that he ran a home like his dad, which was very, very strict. Carol never reports any abuse happening in that house, and neither one of the sons do either, but they do mention that he was very strict. So that divorce ended as amicably as possible, and this is the closest in age he's ever going to be to any of these women. Then, around 1981, Peterson actually was briefly engaged to a 20-year-old, and at this time he was 27. This doesn't sound that weird to me, except for the fact that the way they met was because she was trying to get into a bar, and she was underage, obviously, and he helped her get in. And he would do this all the time, and he would help her friends get in all the time. So they started dating, and 4 months into this relationship, they get engaged. She actually ended the relationship because he was so clingy and really controlling. And although she does say that he never actually abused her, he harassed the living hell out of her after they broke up. What Drew Peterson did and had other police do was write her parking tickets, but they would not put the tickets on her car. They would just write them and file them with the courts, but not give her notice of it. So then eventually she's got so many tickets she hasn't paid, a warrant goes out for her arrest. And then Drew Peterson goes and arrests her, and she had to go to jail. So this is where we go from him being controlling or just having a strict household to being possessive and also harassing. And she would later say that it seems like after her was when some abusive tendencies started with Drew Peterson. After this, we move on to him meeting and marrying 23-year-old Vicki Connolly in 1982. At this time, he's around 28. And Vicki actually had a daughter named Lisa from a previous marriage. And their marriage started off pretty good. They actually ran or managed a bar together. They didn't own it, but they ran it. And they were married for 10 years. But later, the daughter, Lisa, his stepdaughter, would say that this marriage was not good. And actually, Vicki has never talked to the media about Drew Peterson because she's too scared. So the former stepdaughter would later tell the media in November of 2007. and she wouldn't show her face while she did this, that Drew Peterson would practice extreme punishments with both of them if they did something wrong, and that not only was her mother abused, but Lisa was abused. He would hit her with a belt if she did things wrong as a punishment. And then the thing that kind of broke the camel's back for Vicki Connolly was that at one point he put a gun to her head and said he could make her murder look like an accident, and then she couldn't take it anymore. She wanted out. In addition to this, Drew was also still cheating on her. One of the women that he began dating while he was still married to Vicki Connolly was 28-year-old Kathleen Sabio. And we'll get into Kathleen's background later, but just a little backstory as to how they met was they went on a blind date, and Drew was extremely charming to Kathleen and her family. And he actually went all in this relationship extremely early on, which in one way was very flattering to Kathleen, but in another way, and I think in hindsight, was very creepy. He said, "I love you" to her on their first date. He always wanted to know where she was and who she was with. And I think the thing that made this better for Kathleen was she appreciated the fact that he was very stable. And this is kind of weird, but she kind of thought of him as a bad boy because he was a cop, which sounds like the opposite. But apparently at one point he worked undercover for a narcotics task force, and she thought this was kind of cool. So that's sort of what she's referring to. I mention this only because that is going to come back and be important later. And he did tell her that he was married, but he did that thing where he said to her that the marriage was not in a good place and they were in the process of separating, and she believed him. And I guess that said a lot with these things, but I feel like you just, I don't know, I feel like you got to be like, come talk to me when you're actually divorced, because I feel like this never ends well when people say that.
Yeah, I feel like that's the classic line.
And he's going to say that again later, but ultimately, they would date for 6 months while Drew was still married to Vicki Connolly. And then his divorce finalized on February 18th, 1992. And then Drew and Kathleen married about 2 months later on May 3rd, 1992. So that's a point that we are at when the movie starts. And now I'm going to get into the next scene. But we've now seen that Drew loves being married. He loves to cheat on the people he's married to, and he has gradually become more and more abusive.
Yeah.
So in this next scene, which is basically the second scene in the movie, we see a little boy bursting into a room, and there is clearly a mom and a dad in bed, and the mom is like moaning, like they're having sex, and he has just run into the room, and the mom freaks out.
Justin!
I told you the kids were going to hear us.
Justin, you have to wait until we say to come in.
And the dad, who is Drew Peterson, he kind of laughs. So then she tells the kid to go outside, and the kid is basically saying that the brother is causing trouble.
Zach's taking soda bottles out of the fridge again.
See, but you couldn't be quiet. No, you're getting too much loving from Big Daddy.
Did you hear what he said? He said Zach is trying that soda bomb thing again.
All right, now put the fear of God into him.
And Drew just stands up, like, stark naked in front of this kid. And it's like his dick is eye level to this child's eyes.
Drew? Justin, close your eyes and go out. Go on.
I would be freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
Also, some attorney out there is not going to agree with me, and I kind of see their point. But I feel like this is arguably indecency with a child. Yeah. Because he's exposing himself, and he clearly makes it seem like it's for his own gratification, because he turns and looks at his wife and goes, well, he needs to know why they call me Big Daddy.
You could have told him to go out first.
He is right to know why they call me Big Daddy.
That's another thing in this movie. He will call himself Big Daddy throughout the entire thing. I didn't find anything saying that he actually did that, but they really want to hit over the head that Drew Peterson thinks very highly of himself.
This scene is so gross.
I know. And okay, from the very beginning, I hate how they portray Kathleen Sabio. I do not think that the way they show her is accurate at all. They do this thing after the kid leaves and Drew has covered himself up, and she's kind of making fun of him, saying,
yeah, have you been inside a men's locker room lately?
Like, he's not as great as he thinks he is. Mm-hmm. And he, quote unquote, threatens to not come back to her after he's dealt with the kids.
You know, maybe I don't have to come back here and finish.
Drew, I'm teasing.
Well, maybe I'm teasing too. You're going to have to wait to find out.
And Kathleen puts on this pouty face like, oh, I was just teasing. Please come back. Like, she absolutely needs him. She cannot live without Drew Peterson's dick. And number one, I highly doubt that's the way Kathleen was hearing about her. But number two, I don't see him just being this chill about a kid running in on them. Mm-hmm. In fact, I see him getting super pissed, but him getting super pissed at Kathleen for not locking the door. And the reason I say this is because the reality of their marriage was that it just went from bad with Vicki Connolly to worse with Kathleen Sabio. So the first 2 years they were married, it was going pretty well. They actually bought a tavern and owned it together. And they seemed pretty happy and cute from the outside, but this did not last. She ends up having 2 children. And after she had the kids, the relationship shifted. Apparently, we're going to see this through the movie. Drew did not like or appreciate women's bodies once they had kids. And he would call her names. He would call her fat. He would call her a dog. And the sense of control he had over her increased. She would later tell friends that she felt like a trapped animal. And this is also when abuse against Kathleen started. And the reality is, a lot of people who knew Kathleen weren't aware of this abuse, and a lot of neighbors weren't aware because Drew was so good at manipulating them and hiding this.
And the next scene that we go to right after this bedroom scene is Drew in his cop car with his partner, and he's actually just recounting the scene that we just saw.
So what's the little guy do? He's taking candies and he's putting them in the liter bottles and shaking them so they explode everywhere. And I mean it, it's exploding everywhere.
Is that why your hair's so gray?
You know what? I kind of like it. It makes me look sort of suave and debonair.
So to me as a viewer, I'm like, I don't know if we're supposed to think that this bedroom scene actually happened or if it's just an example of a macho gross story that Drew would tell his partner and friends, because Drew was the type to brag about his escapades with women all the time.
Yeah.
But so they pull up to a motel where they're responding to a call, and this guy comes up to Drew Peterson, and it seems like this guy has gotten into some legal trouble where he might have stolen some money, and Drew Peterson pulled some sort of string so that he wasn't charged with anything. So this guy thinks Drew's a cool cop, I guess.
Sean Peterson, yo! Man, what you doing here?
Just keeping the peace.
Guess that's what you do. You keep the state of town humming. Sure. And I still ain't forgot what you did for me. Help me out with my little problem.
No, I know you didn't mean to steal that money. You were going to give it back.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for you, I'd be sitting in a cell right now.
Right, sure.
Need anything? Call me.
All right, I will do that. You take care now.
All right.
And this seems to be a reference to some trouble Drew actually got himself into in real life. He was working with a state-run undercover narcotics team in the city of Joliet while he was married to Vicki Connolly. And he was dismissed from the state team after it was believed that he gave information to an illegal biker gang, which would have compromised the investigation during an undercover drug deal. So during this incident, he actually was fired from his job at the Bolingbrook PD and was indicted on criminal charges for this incident. But eventually those charges are dropped and Drew's brought back on to Bolingbrook. So at this point in the movie, all of this stuff is in the past. It's already happened and Drew's already back on the force.
Yeah. And one thing that happened when he was brought back on the force was he was demoted and his pay was docked. And this is one reason that people believe that Drew started really getting abusive with Vicki. This is not a good excuse at all, but he was quote unquote under the stress of being fired like this. But also he was a lying liar who lies. So Drew Peterson deserves everything he gets in the future.
Yeah. So we're pulling up to this hotel after we see this guy who thanks Drew, and we meet Kaylee Cuoco for the first time. She is playing Stacy Peterson. Kaylee Cuoco is too old to be playing Stacy because in real life, at the time that Stacy meets Drew, she is 17 years old and Drew is
47.
Yeah. So in the movie, Stacy has called the cops because a husband is chasing his wife around the hotel with scissors and just being like a crazy drunk dude.
Excuse me. Stacy, are you the one who called us?
Yes, I did.
And have you seen the husband?
Yeah, he's been running through here. He has scissors.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, he's a little crazy, but love will do that to you.
Love will do that to you.
Mm-hmm. And we just see Drew like light up. She said the magic words. She's revealed that she thinks some dysfunction is normal in love. And they have a little flirting back and forth.
You seem a little young to know anything about love.
A little young for you.
Oh, as you think I'm flirting with you.
I definitely think you're hitting on me.
You see, if I didn't know better, I'd say you were flirting with me.
And then Drew gets to be the hero and arrest this drunk guy who's chasing his wife around with scissors.
Duty calls.
Hey, where's my wife?
Your right's here. All right.
Oh, come on!
They show him kind of in action, putting this guy's arms behind his back, and they make it seem like such a big deal. I feel like they almost put it in slow motion, but it's just him grabbing his arms from up high and pulling them down. It was yeah. Really, really scraping the bottom of the barrel.
And then we're going to see Stacy's sister comes to pick her up from work, and Stacy asks,
hey, you see that cop over there? The one on the left?
think he's hot?
No. He's like 50.
And I love this sister character. They have her in there as like the voice of reason a little bit. In real life, I'm not sure that Stacey was getting that much feedback on her relationship early with Drew because her family might have known that she was dating this guy, but they didn't really interact with him or see him. But for the purposes of the movie, this character is pretty great.
Yeah, and she's based on Stacey's real half-sister, whose name was Tina Ryan. And at the time that she met Drew Peterson, she was actually living with her, and she was acting as Stacey's guardian.
Gotcha.
And I'm not going to lie, when I first was like looking up stuff about the story, I was thinking, number one, Drew Peterson is just gross. But also, if I was 17 and a man that old was coming at me, I would probably be freaked out a little bit. But obviously, yeah. Stacey is not. And I think it's important to talk about her background because that really explains why she would be attracted to Drew Peterson and why she would want to marry him, despite their age difference. Stacey Kales was the third child born to Christy and Anthony Kales on January 20th, 1984. She grew up in a suburb of Chicago. Her family did not have a lot of money growing up, and they had a fuck ton of tragedy that happened to them. Even before Stacey was born, there were stories that her father was abusive to her mother. In 1983, her mother filed a protective order against her father after he pointed a gun at her. Her dad was actually charged with aggravated assault, but her mom refused to testify in that incident, so the charges were dropped. And then, while Stacey's mother was pregnant with her, there was a fire in their family home, and one of her older sisters that was about 1.5 died in the fire. Then, after Stacey was born, when she was about 3 years old, another one of her sisters died from sudden infant death syndrome. And according to Joseph Hosey's book, the death of that second child really sent Stacey's mother over the edge. She was very affected by this, as would any parent. This made childhood particularly hard for not only Stacey, but her older brother and her other younger sister that we're going to see later in the movie named Cassandra. There were reports that her mom suffered from depression and at some point was in a psychiatric institution. And both parents already had issues with drinking, but this only became worse. And her mom also had a bit of a drug problem. Her mom actually ended up having several criminal convictions, including one when she left Stacey's brother when he was 7 years old out in the snow without adequate clothing. Eventually, her dad filed for divorce from her mom in 1990, but they both were kind of still around. Then in 1998, when Stacey was 14 years old, her mom took the family Bible, said she was going to church, and never came home. And they still do not know what happened to her. She left and never came back. They do not know what happened. One of Stacey's aunts in the Marcia Clark 48 Hours TV show talked about this, and she said that they think what happened was she probably left with some guy or something to go get drugs and something bad happened. They believe she is dead. They don't believe she's out there living some other life. Unfortunately, after this, Stacey's father was not much better. He moved the family around a lot, and similar to Stacey's mother, he would disappear for days or weeks at a time, and Stacey and her brother and sister were just left to take care of themselves. When Stacey was an adult and later married, she would actually tell her neighbor that when she was about 12 or 13 years old, her dad left for 3 weeks and they had no clue where he was. And so all three of these kids would just get up, make themselves meals, go to school and come home. And she said that the reason they did this and didn't call an adult or ask for help was because they knew that if someone found them and found out they didn't have a parent, they were going to put them in foster care and they were going to get separated. And they did not want to be separated. They were all they had. So this home was not good either. And eventually, when Stacey was in high school, that is when she's going to move in with her older half-sister, Tina, the one that we just saw in the movie. And Tina is another daughter of Stacey's mom, just from a different marriage. She's about 8 years older. And fortunately, her younger sister, Cassandra, was also able to avoid foster care because she had some blessed employee that actually took her under her wing and let her live with her. And then later, when all this stuff about Stacey happens with Drew Peterson, she's going to be the family spokesperson. And another thing that Stacey had to deal with as a kid is even though her brother was 4 years older and he didn't really have to worry about being put into foster care because he was already over 18, he had some pretty bad criminal history. In 2005, Yelton, this is her brother, he was charged and convicted and then later sent to prison for 4.5 years for aggravated sexual assault of a victim between 14 and 16. The translation of that charge is that he was with a 15-year-old girl and it looks like he might have considered this girl his girlfriend, even though that's not dating. When a 15-year-old is dating a 25-year-old, that's abuse. But he actually ended up attacking her and actually raping her. So he goes to prison for that. And then there's also another report with another girlfriend from 2002 that he beat her up in a parking lot. So Stacey was no stranger to abusive relationships. She was also no stranger to relationships where there was a massive age difference. And surprisingly, despite all of this, Stacey got out of that family pretty unscathed. She was very successful. At the time that Drew Peterson met her, she actually was in junior college trying to be a nurse. So the reason I say all of this is it's just important to see where she came from and why a stable police officer that's very charming would be very attractive to her. And also, for the record, the movie doesn't get into this, but the Bolingbrook Police Department did not like the fact that Drew Peterson, one of their officers, was dating a 17-year-old when he was 47. And they actually did an inquest and spoke to the district attorney at the time to make sure he wasn't doing anything illegal. Because if he was, number one, they were going to fire him, but he was also going to get charged with something. And under the Illinois law at the time, the age of consent was 17. And the only exception to that was if the older person in this relationship was some form of authority. And specifically, the law was written saying this because they didn't want teachers or counselors or coaches dating their students. A lot of people say you would think a cop would be a form of authority, but I'm pretty sure what happened is when they went to the DA to consult about this, the DA looked up case law and that didn't fall under the purview. So he was free to date her, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So then after Drew Peterson meets Stacey for the first time, we go back to Drew and Kathleen's house and we see that Kathleen is in the kitchen with her two kids and her sister. And the sister's name in the movie is Sophia. Kathleen actually had two sisters. One was named Anna Marie and one was named Sue. And it looks like Kathleen and Drew are getting ready to leave for a police department party of some kind. And Kathleen is telling the kids,
make sure you brush your teeth and no staying up past 10, even if Aunt Sophia lets you.
Don't worry, boys. What your mother don't know won't hurt her.
And Kathleen responds to this saying,
oh, yeah, I know you. You let them stay up late and watch scary movies. A lot more fun than going to the stupid party.
Like, she clearly does not want to go to this police department party that Drew is taking her to. And right as she says that, Drew comes up behind her and very calmly says,
then don't come.
Right. And then you'll pout for a week.
I don't pout. It's not my style.
This scene is making Drew look like a mature adult and Kathleen looks like a bratty child, and it pisses me off. Then just after this, we see Kathleen stomping out the front door as they walk to the car to go to this party. And there's no other way to say it. She's just bitching and moaning at Drew Peterson.
You don't pout. What should we call those little comments and digs? Being a jerk? Being an ass?
Again, pisses me off because this is not how Kathleen was. And I'm not sure if the movie is trying to portray the relationship from the perspective of Drew Peterson and all the interviews he did since we started with an interview, or they're trying to show that Kathleen was a strong woman and she was not going to leave this marriage without putting up a fight from him and not taking his bullshit. But it does not come off that way. It makes her look naggy and like a brat, and I don't appreciate it. The reality of Kathleen's situation was that her parents divorced when she was very young. She lived with her mom and she had a very chaotic childhood as well. She got into some trouble when she was younger and she ultimately dropped out of high school when she was 17. But then later she ended up getting her GED and getting a place of her own to live and got an associate's in marketing. So she actually did, like Stacey, very well under the circumstances. It also explains why, like Stacey, she would be attracted to Drew Peterson as a stable man that was a cop when they first got together. And actually, right before she ended up dating Drew Peterson, she was on and off dating another guy, another bookkeeper that she worked with, and it ended up not working out because he didn't want to get married. And her sisters have later said that if that relationship had worked out, this whole mess with Drew Peterson never would have happened. But she was pretty sad and broken from that relationship ending. So when Drew Peterson swept her off her feet, it was like there was no turning back. So I think that might be why they're portraying her in this manner, but it does not come off well. And the other thing, too, is that Kathleen was not in a situation where she would be mouthing off to him like that without some dangerous, violent repercussions. She would continually tell her family throughout the marriage that she was scared of him. It is true that she didn't actually call the police about any abuse until after they were in the process of getting divorced, but she does talk about it. And we know of at least one incident when they were in their first year of marriage that Drew Peterson hit her head on the dining room table and it ended up with her in the hospital. And then she would also later talk about how he would regularly restrain her, hold her down, knock her into walls, threaten to take her kids, leave marks all over her body. And he also would talk regularly about punishment and teaching her a lesson. So I just don't think that she would react this way to something so small like going to a party without worrying about him potentially killing her.
It shows her upset with him, but we don't know the background as to why she would be so upset with him and what she's been putting up with. It's not just him making her go to a party. It's all of this other abuse every single day.
It's a weird scene. I even remember thinking that when I first watched it, when I didn't know as much information about this, I was like, this does not look right. And the other thing about this scene that's notable is that when they're going to the car, we see that a neighbor walking his dog witnesses this fight that they're having as they're getting in the car. And we have Drew's first mention of women's menstrual cycles being the reason that they're crazy.
It's like this every month with her. It's like clockwork.
This is number one. We're going to keep count. And
I need it. So.
I know. He frequently will blame this on any reason that a woman is mad. And the other thing, too, is no neighbors, even in trial, ever said that they witnessed abuse by Drew to Kathleen, which is actually very surprising. But it also is really telling to the fact that it is easier than you think to keep this stuff private and nobody notice. Mm-hmm. So after this, we get to this police station party, and this is the shittiest party I've ever seen. It is like in the break room at the police department. I don't know why they're doing this. I wouldn't want to go to this either. And we see that Drew is clearly flirting with another blonde and Kathleen is pissed about it. And we do know that Kathleen had suspicions of him cheating. And there was one incident where she looked at his phone bill and he had a ton of calls to this one particular number. And she ended up figuring out that this number belonged to a girl named Heather, and she actually confronted him about it. After she did that, this woman disappeared. But the thing about this is Drew was a little bit better about hiding his infidelity to her. So she wasn't seeing it directly like she is in this scene. The other thing you'll notice in this is that Kathleen appears drunk. She's drinking when she's seeing Drew flirting. And then we go into this other scene where Drew is giving her a tour of the police department, and they're over in the area where there are jail cells that they've apparently just redone. And she's staggering with the way she walks and she's holding a glass of wine. This, I think, is a call to the fact that any time Kathleen tried to call one of her sisters to say that Drew had been hitting her, he would grab the phone and tell the sisters, oh, she's just drunk. She's been drinking. He would regularly accuse Kathleen of having a drinking problem and then hang up the phone. So she was never able to get a hold of them when he was actually doing stuff to her. And then they walk into this cell and Drew Peterson makes a joke about having sex in the cell. And she's like,
I bet you've done that already.
What are you talking about?
I'd rather catch lice.
Why don't you stay in there for a while?
Very funny. Open up.
You said you prefer the lice.
Let me out of here. You son of a bitch!
And he literally locks her in the cell and he won't let her out until this other cop that is with them on this tour is like, Drew, we don't want the captain to find out about this. And I never found anything saying that he held her in a cell like this. But there are other accounts where, as the prosecutors would describe it, he held her hostage. We know of one incident where Kathleen was walking down the stairs with some laundry and Drew appeared out of nowhere in his full uniform. And he took the laundry basket from her, held her down on the stairs with a knife to her neck and would not let her leave for several hours. Also, one of her sisters told the media that there was an incident where Drew took her down to the basement in the house and he, quote, was doing things to her against her will. The sister doesn't go into describe what those things were, but you can imagine. So I feel like this is a scene that, number one, it's just showing how he can control her. But number two, in a less violent way so that it can be on TV, show that he literally has held her against her will before. And then after the cop kind of breaks this up, Kathleen looks at Drew and says,
do you know how much I hate you sometimes?
Which is interesting because the person typically yelling or saying just like horrible things to the other person was actually Drew Peterson. During this hostage incident on the stairs, when he had the knife to her neck, he actually said to her, why don't you just die? And he would regularly call her and tell her that he was coming over to, quote unquote, deal with her. So if anybody was saying shit like this, it was Drew, not Kathleen.
And then straight from this scene, we're going to see Drew Peterson on his motorcycle off to pick up Stacy.
Sergeant Peterson, why am I not surprised to see you?
Well, I'm surprised to see you. You must have some kind of a magnet inside.
Nice bike.
And like we said, you have to make fun of the Lifetime movie story element sometimes. It brings levity to this anyways. I cracked up with the classic trope of hot girl can't resist man on motorcycle. No matter what the man on the motorcycle looks like, it's just irresistible. So sure enough, Stacy jumps straight on and they end up at a private airplane hangar. And we find out that Drew owns his own plane. He talks about how well he's doing financially, talks about how he owns a little bar.
You own a plane?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun to fly over Lake Michigan or across to Madison for lunch or something.
Wow. You must have a lot of money to own your own plane.
Yeah, I do all right. I own some businesses. You know Suds over on Elkin Street? That's mine.
Gosh, I can't imagine what that feels like. I'm always worried about money.
And this just goes back to why he might be appealing to Stacy. Not just that he had money, but that he represented this stable life and he seems like he could provide for her. One thing that he's not going to bring up is that Kathleen owns half of everything that Drew owns at this point. Pretty much everything he has is community property that they've gotten during their marriage. But Drew and Stacy are going to start making out, and this is where he's going to stop for a second.
So then you're taking me out?
Oh, I'd like to take you out. But I think there's something you should know first.
I don't care how old you are. I just don't.
Technically, I'm still married.
And Stacy sort of pauses for a second, but then decides that it's fine. We don't know how this was actually related to Stacy in real life, but like we said, he seems like a stable person. It seems like he is very interested in her. And at this point, Stacy's living with her sister and her sister's husband, and she really wants to get out on her own and have her own life.
Yeah. For the record, Drew Peterson did have a motorcycle, but moving right along.
Yeah.
We get back to Drew and Kathleen's house, and we once again see Kathleen losing her shit.
Morning.
You are such a liar.
Hey, you cut it out.
So sick of your lying. Where were you? You're late.
Not late, I was at work.
You're lying every time you open your mouth.
You know what? I'm tired of your psycho talk.
He walks in and apparently he is late from coming home from work and she throws a bowl at him. And I don't even really want to get into this scene too much because it's just another way that they're showing Kathleen look crazy when I don't think it's fair or accurate. But what is important about this scene is the fact that this is the first time we're going to see Drew get a little more physical with her. After she throws the bowl at him, he's like, fine, I'm going to leave. So he starts walking out the front door and Kathleen comes up behind him and she's hitting him on the back. Basically, she's mad because she's really suspicious that he's cheating at this point. And he turns around and grabs her and pushes her.
What do you mean? You're sick of it.
Okay?
Listen, get upstairs.
Bastard.
Your mom's acting crazy.
Don't you dare act like I'm the crazy one. I am the crazy.
And then the other thing we see is that not only does he get physical with her, but there's a kid on the staircase and he sees this happen and he actually yells at them, stop fighting.
Yeah. And from there, we go to Drew buying Stacy a car.
Drew, you're not serious.
It's all yours.
No, you can't buy me a car. It's too much.
It is okay for you to let me take care of you. I just want to make your life perfect.
You already do.
And during the time they were dating, Drew really did dote on Stacy hand and foot. He got her a job with the city of Bolingbrook, so she didn't have to work at the hotel anymore. And he really was taking care of her and making her think that she could have a comfortable, stable life with him. In the next scene, Stacy's telling her sisters about how he bought her a car and how this proves that he's going to leave his wife. And one of the sisters says, or it just proves that his wife is stupid and doesn't realize that he's seeing someone else. Which, that's my favorite character, is this sister, Tina, who's the voice of reason. But Stacy's not really hearing it.
Look, you guys, I don't care what anyone thinks, okay? Drew is sweet to me, and he wants to take care of me.
Stacy,
he still lives with his wife.
And not for much longer.
She's excited about this relationship at this point. And kind of building on this excitement, we get this scene where Drew sneaks Stacy into his home with Kathleen.
What if Kathleen wakes up?
She won't.
What if the boys wake up?
They're not going to wake up. Come on.
Look, I can just get a room at that motel again. Come on.
No, it's fine.
So it's Kathleen and Drew's home, and Drew's going to sneak Stacy down into the basement. And we see Stacy a little hesitant, but she's also a little excited.
Really not sure about this.
So what? Still better than the backseat of a car.
And reports say that this is true. Drew would sleep in the basement and he would sneak Stacy in. Bolton and I kind of talked about this. When you're a 17-year-old, it's normal for your boyfriend to sneak you into a basement, but not when you're 47 years old. So that's part of the disconnect here, is really just the age, I think. She was young and excited about this relationship. She's immature at this point, and he's totally taking advantage of that.
Yeah. So after this, we see Drew coming home, and Kathleen is there, and she appears very upset. And she reveals to Drew that she has received an anonymous letter that is telling her that Drew is cheating on her.
I found this letter in our mailbox last night, telling me how stupid I am that I don't know my husband is having an affair.
And it actually identifies Stacy as the person that Drew is cheating with. And Kathleen is throwing Drew out of the house. She's kicking him out.
I'm sick and tired of your crap. Just get out of here. Get out of my house.
This is my house. They'll never forget that.
Don't touch me. Never, ever touch me again.
Drew is going to leave the house at this point, and he's going to go and confront Stacy to see if she was the one that wrote this note.
Kathleen got a letter saying that I was fooling around on her. You better tell me that that wasn't you.
Drew, it wasn't.
We don't know if he actually did this, and we never find out who wrote this thing. The important thing is that she got it, and it actually was real. Some information that we do find out in this next scene is that Stacy reveals to Drew that she is pregnant and she's keeping the baby.
I thought you said you wanted us to be together.
I do, but on my terms.
Well, maybe I have terms now. I'm pregnant. Keeping it, I already decided.
And Drew is actually happy about this. And he says that he's going to get her a place and that they're going to move in together. And this is going to be great. And the problem with this is Drew does buy a house for them, but he buys it down the freaking street, like a few houses away from Kathleen. And he claims he does this so he can be close to his kids. But the reality is he does this to absolutely terrorize Kathleen. And we actually see this in the next scene when the cops have been called over to Kathleen and Drew's house that Drew is no longer living in.
Get here, and they're going to throw your ass out of here.
Or maybe they're going to put the crazy lady in cuffs.
I am not crazy. You broke in here.
Technically, I still own this house. Hey, Jimmy, how you doing?
Oh, about the same as I was when I was out here 2 days ago.
I want him arrested.
Kathy, you know I'm not going to do that.
I have the right to protection.
I just came for my socks and underwear.
You liar! I want to see what's in that bag.
You see what I have to deal with?
And this is actually pretty accurate to how the police reacted to the reports that Kathleen made. And she made a lot of them. During the time that they were going through this divorce, which was about a year, she called the cops 18 times. And they never arrested Drew. And it's interesting to see what they would write in the reports. They would say things like there was a mutual argument between the two of them. They would usually try and say that we didn't arrest anybody because Drew agreed to go home. And for the record, at least in the state where I'm licensed, you can't do that. If a cop has probable cause that there was some sort of domestic violence that took place, you can't just say, okay, you guys separate, you go home, and we'll be done with this. You have to arrest someone because, like in this situation, they can always come back. And he does come back several times. There were always issues when they were having to exchange the kids for custody. Kathleen actually had custody, but Drew had visitation. And probably the worst thing in all of this is Drew encouraged Stacy to get involved in all this. And that's not really shown in the movie, but she would regularly rollerblade by and cause problems to the point that I believe in part of their custody exchanges, it was said that Stacy was not allowed to be there when Drew did this with Kathleen. So we're just getting a little taste of this. And that being said, if Drew ever called the cops on Kathleen, or if Drew wanted Kathleen arrested, the cops were very quick to act, and there was at least one incident where they did arrest her, and she got charged with battery. And right after we see the cop leaving Kathleen's house, after Drew has apparently broken in, we get a scene of Drew and Stacy moving into their new house that is just down the street. And Kathleen comes by, and she's giving Drew documents for their divorce.
I'm not going to deprive your baby of having a father. I already agreed to the divorce. But I'm not going to sign those divorce papers until you sign this agreement that we still have to negotiate the property settlement.
They're going to do a bifurcated divorce. And essentially what that means is that there's several parts to a divorce. And normally, even though they're all different things, you finish them out all at the same time. So there's actual ending of the divorce. There's dealing with the kids and who gets custody of the kids. And there's dealing with all the property. What Kathleen and her lawyer have agreed to do with Drew is to end the divorce first so that they are no longer married so that Drew can now marry Stacy. And then they will continue finishing out all of the property assets from then on, even though Drew is now married to Stacy. In this scene, we see some like hostility between Kathleen and Stacy.
I feel sorry for you. You actually believe he's a catch.
Well, I don't care what you think.
I used to be you, and one day you'll be me. And you'll regret the day you ever laid eyes on Drew Peterson.
I will never be like you. Mean and bitter. Look, this house is going to be full of love and laughter, and I'm sorry if that makes you jealous, but you had your chance with him. It's my turn.
You can have him, little girl.
But the thing is, like I said earlier, this was much, much worse. There was one incident where Drew was dropping off the kids after he had them for visitation, and Stacy was in the car with him. And when Drew drops the kids off, Kathleen gets mad because Stacy is there and she's not supposed to be. She comes out of her house and Drew is holding a camera. And while Drew's holding the camera, Stacy comes up to Kathleen and they start physically fighting. Then at some point, Drew gives the camera to Stacy and Drew actually starts physically fighting with Kathleen. And at one point, he almost pushes her down, but then Kathleen hits him. And this is the incident where Drew calls the cops and he says that he wants Kathleen arrested for battery, and they do arrest her. And the DA at the time actually tried to give Kathleen probation and a plea deal. But Kathleen was like, fuck you, I'm not doing that. And she actually went to trial and got acquitted. So this is expunged from her record. But this also shows when violence is going on, how easy it is for someone to get arrested that's actually a victim. But moving on from that, we are now at Drew and Stacy's wedding.
Yeah. So we're at the house and we see that the baby has been born. And Stacy is telling her sisters that she finally has the family that she always wanted. And one of her sisters kind of butts in.
You mean the money you always wanted, the house? She always wanted.
Brianna, it's her wedding day. Let her be happy.
I'm sorry. I just have a hard time believing that this guy made you happy.
Yeah, well, there won't be money for much longer. Kathleen gets half of everything in the settlement. The hearing's next month, and poof, that money's gone. He could have stayed with her, kept all that money, but he chose me and our perfect baby.
And we get another really cringy Lifetime scene as Stacy is walking down the aisle. Drew's stepbrother slash best man deliver a line thing.
I don't know how you do it, Drew. I'd get these luscious women to keep marrying you.
Justin, tell your Uncle Glenn here that Big Daddy's got it going on.
Big Daddy's got it going on.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And then Drew makes his child tell his brother, Big Daddy's got it going on. In real life, Peterson is 49 at this point, and Stacy is 19 years old when she marries him. They have their 3-month-old son, Anthony, at the wedding. He's there. And their daughter, Lacey, will be born less than 2 years later.
And they also got married just a couple of weeks after the divorce was finalized between Kathleen and Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing is this brother that we see in the wedding, this is actually in real life based on Drew Peterson's real stepbrother in the movie. His name is Glenn. In real life, his name is Thomas Morphy, and he is going to become extremely important. So we are going to come back to him later.
Mm-hmm. After the wedding, we're going to go to a scene where Drew is returning the kids after a visit at his house.
Yeah. So it starts with the kids actually at Drew's house with Stacy. And this is unusual. And I feel like it's a little hint as to what's going on. Drew says,
come on,
Let's go, guys. Gotta get back to your mom's.
Oh, wait, they haven't finished eating yet.
If I'm 2 minutes late, Kathleen will say I'm violating a court order. So, let's go.
And the reality is, Drew notoriously brought the kids back late. All of the time. But this time, he wants to get them back right away. And so they go down the street and they knock on the door and no one is answering at Kathleen's house, the house that she and Drew used to share.
I can fit through the doggy door.
Why don't you guys walk back to my house and I'll figure out where your mom is.
But I...
No, no buts. Go on.
In real life, they were really with him during that time. They had gone to the aquarium in Chicago and he brought them back and nobody was there. The date that this all happened was February 29th, 2004. After Drew sends the kids back to his house, he actually will call one of the neighbors that he knows that Kathleen is friends with. Her name is Mary Poncharelli, and ask if this neighbor has seen Kathleen, and she says no. Then he goes and he gets a locksmith to actually unlock the door at this house, which surprised me that the locksmith did it, because I was thinking, that's not his house. I don't think you can do that, but he does. And then Drew goes back to this neighbor, Mary Poncharelli, along with another neighbor named Steve Casarano, and he asked them both to go into the house instead of him. Now, in the movie, we're just going to see Steve Casarano go into the house.
I don't know why you just don't go in yourself.
Because I'm not stupid.
Well, how does that make you stupid?
Because Kathleen accuses me of all kinds of things. She gets restraining orders, and so I just can't go in there. I need somebody else to do it.
In real life, Steve and Mary go upstairs as they're looking around. They go into the bathroom. And in the bathroom, they find Kathleen Sabio in an empty bathtub, naked, and she is dead. In the movie, Steve just yells for Drew to come upstairs. But the thing that really got Drew upstairs was when Mary screamed. And he runs up there. And both in the movie and real life, Drew is going to go up to the body and feel for a pulse. And there's not going to be one. And this is when the police are called. And the thing that happens when the police are called, and they don't show this so much in the movie, but the guy that came to assess this whole scene, he had never been at a homicide or death scene before. And so he was just going with what the criminal technician said about the whole scene. And what this person said to him was that, oh, this looks like an accident. It looks like a slip and fall accident. So he was just assuming that was what happened the entire time. So during the time that they are assessing what's happened and looking at Kathleen's body, they do not block off the scene to the bathroom. People are walking around wherever they want in this bathroom, including Drew Peterson. They do not take inventory of certain things that they normally would in a homicide investigation. And they completely miss things that are very obvious. For example, there was a giant gash on the back of Kathleen Peterson's head and blood was dripping down her body. And according to some people that were at this scene, they didn't even look to see where that blood was coming from. It was only noticed later when she was getting an autopsy done. And ultimately, what they're going to determine happened in this situation is that they think Kathleen was trying to take a bath. And she slipped and fell. And at the time, the bathtub was full of water and she drowned because she was knocked out. And then slowly, there was not a good blockage in the bathtub. The water drains out. A couple things that they also don't mention in the movie, but that came up at trial later, is that Mary, her friend, noticed that there was no towel or robe or anything like that around the bathtub. Kathleen still had all of her jewelry on. And in the movie, it's going to go to the next scene where Drew and Stacy are actually walking into the police station and they are stopped by a reporter. And this reporter introduced himself as Joseph Hosey.
Hey, Joe Hosey with the Herald. I'm checking into a possible story on your ex-wife's death.
I'm sorry to disappoint you, but there's really no story there.
Is it okay that I quote you on that?
Well, I'm really sad about it. And my boys are really broken up. And that's what I'm thinking about right now. Today, it's just a formality. Sort of pain in the ass.
So he is actually based on the author of this book, Fatal Vows, that the movie is based off of. And we'll see him here and again throughout the movie because he actually did interview Drew Peterson several times. Stacy's going to get interviewed. And in real life, the interview that she actually did while they were assessing the accident. And what happened in real life was that this lead investigator starts to interview her. And just as he starts, Drew Peterson comes into the room and he says, "Do you mind if I sit with my wife? She seems very distraught." And as kind of a professional courtesy, this investigator says, yeah, okay, that's fine. So big problem, because Stacy's not interviewed alone. The entire time she is talking, Drew is sitting with her. He's got his hand on her shoulder and her knee, and it's reported that he is like finishing her sentences for her. So this wasn't an individual interview given by Stacy. This is basically Drew and Stacy having an interview together, which you never do. The other thing that the movie doesn't talk about is after Kathleen's death, there actually was a proceeding known as a coroner's inquest done. Basically, the county is going to bring together six people, and they are going to serve as something very similar to a grand jury. And there will be witnesses brought in who were at the death scene, as well as any other witnesses that may be necessary. And the point of this jury is to determine the manner of death in the particular case, such as suicide, homicide, or natural causes. Coroners in Illinois do not do these that much anymore because there was a change in the law that allowed coroners to determine the manner of death without these juries. But in this case, concerning Kathleen, there was one done, and they were trying to determine whether this was possibly an accident or a homicide or something else.
And Stacy actually testified at that as well, saying the same things that she said in this interview with this detective with Drew sitting next to her. And what Stacy said is that basically Drew had been with her all night.
And where was your husband after 9 p.m. the night before his ex-wife was found?
He was putting Austin to bed, and then we went to bed together around 10:30.
She seems a little nervous at first, but then the officer says, oh, don't worry, there's no need to be nervous. We are pretty sure this is an accidental drowning.
So to your knowledge, she was sleeping with you the entire night?
Sorry, it's kind of hard being questioned like this. We just found out that I'm pregnant again, so I think that the stress is not good for the baby.
No need to stress, I'm just getting through paperwork here.
She also mentions at this point that she is pregnant with her second kid. So Stacy has now given Drew an alibi, and at this point, Kathleen's death is ruled an accident.
And from there, we're going to go to a scene where Stacy and Drew have some new neighbors moving in next door. And we see that Kathleen and Drew's boys are now living with Stacy and Drew. And Stacy wants to go over and say hi to the new neighbors. She wants everybody to come with her.
The new neighbors just moved in. Let's go say hi.
Why would you want to do that? You got a baby in the house. You got a baby in there. You got guys right here. What do you want to go over there for now?
Well, I want to go say hello.
Why wouldn't you be staying home?
Fine. You don't want to go with me. I'll just go by myself.
And Drew doesn't want to go, and he doesn't want her leaving the house. And he has this line where he says,
used to be a man could keep his woman pregnant in the house.
So we can see that his controlling nature is starting to come out with Stacy at this point. And we see that Stacy's walking around the neighborhood with this neighbor named Karen. The neighbor in real life is named Sharon Bukowski, and they also become fast friends like we see in the movie.
That was so nice of you to come over. You didn't have to bring dinner. What was that sort of unusual flavor in it?
Oh, pumpkin spice.
Mm-hmm. Pumpkin spice in the chili?
Yeah. It's a trick my sister Lauren taught me. She's more like my mom than my real mom ever was. She took off when I was 12, so. And by the way, if you just take this road, you can get to the market way faster than hitting the light.
You are so sweet to show me around.
It's no problem.
And Stacy's giving her directions to how to get to the market and kind of just starts word vomiting.
I don't get out much with four kids.
Well, if you ever need me to watch them, I'm right next door.
Oh, thanks.
How are the boys doing?
Zach's better, but not Justin. Oh, Karen, sometimes he cries so hard and it just breaks my heart. But I'm legally adopting both of them. I don't want them ever to think they don't have a mom.
I'm legally adopting the boys. She points out Kathleen's house.
This is the house Drew shared with Kathleen and the boys.
Yes.
This is where they found her body in the bathtub.
Wow. So close.
I know. Actually, Drew used to sneak me into the basement when we first started seeing each other. I used to freak out thinking Kathleen was going to wake up and come beat me up.
And the neighbor's telling her, like, that's not right, Stacy. And Stacy starts to defend him, but then says, I guess it really wasn't right.
He brought you into the house while his wife was still upstairs? Honey, Stacy, that's not right.
Well, he had to. I mean, everyone knows him in this town. And plus, she was horrible. Yeah, I guess it really wasn't right, was it?
And to me, this is starting to clue us into the fact that Stacy doesn't have a lot of people to talk to. So when she meets this neighbor and the neighbor is happy to listen, happy to be her friend, Stacy grabs onto that. And Stacy starts to realize that what she has with Drew isn't great.
Yeah.
After we meet Karen, we're going to get a scene where Drew's in the cop car with his partner and there's a guy who was arrested in the back and he's saying,
"Come on, man, you don't get it. I just needed the money for some food."
"Are you idiots eating meth now?"
"Hey, I wouldn't put it past them."
"No, man, my girl, she's found out she's pregnant."
And Drew starts talking about how pregnant women are big, fat, sweaty monsters. And he knows because Stacy's supposed to pop any day now.
"My wife is pregnant and you don't see me out there nabbing purses."
"When's Stacy gonna pop anyway?"
"God, it's, I think her due date was last week. And trust me, you do not want this to happen. I mean, they're all hopped up on hormones. You think your girl is a nightmare when she's jonesing for tweak? Well, she becomes a big, fat, sweaty monster."
And this kind of clues us into, again, like we said, anytime a woman had a baby, to Drew, her body became disgusting. And this happened in each one of his relationships. And with Stacy, her family told investigators how Drew would abuse her verbally and criticize her so severely that she felt insecure about her looks. And Stacy's still very young. She's 21 years old at this point, and she ended up having several plastic surgeries. She had a boob job, a tummy tuck. She got braces, laser hair removal, and LASIK.
And some of these things, they're not necessarily bad, but the point of it is, it wasn't really her choice. It was Drew telling her she needed to do these things.
But back to the cop car, Drew gets a call and Stacy, sure enough, is having the baby. So Drew rushes off to the hospital. And in the next scene, we see Drew talking to the new baby, which is a baby girl. And he has this creepy line where he says,
"So pure, like an angel. Well, don't worry, Daddy's not going to let any of the dirty boys get you."
And at this point, he gives Stacy a new cell phone.
"Don't lose this one."
"I'll find the other one eventually."
"No, you need one now. I mean, I can't be out at work at night and not know you're safe. You need to answer that."
"Honey, I always answer when you call."
"Not all the time. So I'll answer this on the third ring."
"You're not serious."
"I gotta know you're safe. I gotta know where you are."
"Okay, fine. Third ring."
Drew, of course, claims it's because he needs to know she's safe, but really it's so that he can know where she is at all times and have control over her. It's not like she can choose not to answer it, or if she misses it, things will be okay. She knows that there's consequences if she does not answer that phone.
After this, we're also going to see Drew getting to a point where he is insanely jealous, and jealous in a way that doesn't even make any sense. Stacy and Drew are at their son's little elementary school graduation where they're still little, but they're doing the whole cap and gown thing. And Stacy has just had a baby and she's saying,
"God, I wish they would get to Zach already. If I don't go home and feed Caitlin soon, I'm going to burst."
Meaning she needs to pump, like her boobs are hurting. And Drew gets so mad at her talking about her boobs in public.
"Why would you be talking about your boobs here? What's wrong with you?
Jason James. Timothy Stevens. Casey Robinson.
I want to know what guy you've got in your head that you're worried about your boobs for."
"Oh my, stop."
Then we notice that Drew is getting crazy when their son's name is called in this graduation. And when it's called, Stacy stands up and is cheering, and she's got a little camera and she's blowing kisses to him. And Drew looks at her like she's blowing kisses to this other guy. The other guy is a 10-year-old. It's their kid. And then after that, we go to this little party that they're having at the house for their son. And Stacy's in the kitchen and she's getting things together for the party. And she turns around and Drew is on her phone.
"Drew, why are you looking at my phone?"
"Because I worked undercover and I can read people like a book. And I can read you."
"There's nothing to read on there."
"I know that when you're blowing kisses around, you're trying to reel in a guy. Because that's how you got me."
"I was blowing kisses to our son, Zach."
"I'm gonna check your email."
"What? You can't do that. There's no one else, okay? You can't just read my email without asking me permission."
"I can do whatever I want. I paid for it."
"No, you can't. This is not your..."
And then this is the first time we see him physical with Stacy, and it's really aggressive. He pushes her straight into a TV. And right as he does that, the neighbor walks in.
"Stacy?
How's the hot dog situation out there?
I don't know. You'll have to ask the boys.
I'll go check.
Honey, is everything all right?
Everything's fine. Drew just threw me into the TV, but want to help me make some more margaritas?
Oh, Drew just pushed me into a TV, but I guess we'll move on with this party. Like, she knows it's bad, but she also knows there's nothing she can do about it. We do know that Stacy is going to tell the neighbor that she was scared and that she was scared he was going to kill her. But I did not find anything showing that the neighbor actually saw something like this happening.
Right. And in the next scene, we see Stacy wants to spend more time with Karen and she wants to work for her. And Drew does not want her to do this. Drew is very against it.
But why would you want to work? I don't understand. I make enough money. The kids need you here.
Drew, it's next door. Like, I'm just going to walk next door, do a little paperwork for Karen while Austin's in preschool. She's going to let me bring the baby.
But it's a slap in the face. I mean, it's like you think I can't support you.
Honey, don't feel that way. Why do you have to feel that way?
Any man would.
Any man from 1960. Look, women work now. I was working when you met me.
But I told you I was going to take you away from all that.
Drew is like offended by the fact that she wants to do this. He's upset that she would want to leave the home because he can provide for her. It's really weird.
Yeah. To me, it just shows the manipulation that's going on because it's like Stacy wants to do something for her. And Drew automatically has to be like, that hurts my feelings. If you want to go out and do that, it means I can't take care of you. So I think it's just another way to bring it all back around to him.
Yeah.
In real life, she was helping her neighbor with Avon, and she was almost done with her nursing degree that she had been working on when she met Drew Peterson. And then we're going to go to a scene where Stacy and Karen are at the grocery store, and Karen gets a call from Drew.
This is Karen.
Karen, where's Stacy? Is Stacy there?
Yeah, she's about 2 aisles over in the grocery store.
Look, is she there or not?
I just said she was. You know, you don't need to check up on her when she's with me.
How do I know what you two are doing together when you're out there on your little trips?
Oh, come on, listen. You want her to be with me. I mean, the most trouble she's going to get into is buying trashy magazines at the checkout stand. Why don't you give her some space?
And Stacy realizes that Drew has called Karen to check up on her and freaks out.
Is that Drew? Oh, gosh, she's probably been trying to call me. I left my cell phone in the car. Okay, will you just watch Caitlin for a minute? I got to call him back.
And in real life, this type of thing did actually happen. There was reports of Stacy going out for a haircut and him calling her 8 times. And Drew wasn't just checking up on Stacy constantly via the phone. He would follow her in his car when she would go out. And he would also swing by the house when he was on shift as a cop. And the neighbor said that he would come around like clockwork to drive by the house and see what was going on. In the next scene, we see Stacy's mowing the lawn in a bikini top and Drew's dragging his partner by to check on her.
It's not even dark and you're dragging us by here? You should just do it late at night, which, you know, I get, but...
No, you don't.
Hey, I'm married too, remember?
Yeah, but I've seen your wife. She's not exactly a stone-cold fox.
Hey, watch it.
No, I'm just telling the truth. I mean, look at Stacy. I mean, she's like a flower. You know, in bloom and, you know, putting her scent out everywhere. And don't tell me that you can't smell her.
And Drew is a total asshole to his partner. And it's like, your wife isn't hot, so you wouldn't get why I'm so worried. And in the movie, I feel like we're questioning why the cops are putting up with this. But in real life, there were more cops who were not only willing to put up with him, but would kind of help him with his antics.
Yeah. And I think they turned a blind eye to the fact that he really was abusing these people. They would all go to bars together and they would actually pretend to harass these women. And then Drew would, quote unquote, come in and save them. I think they thought it was all in good fun. A very skewed good fun and completely idiotic, but that's what they were doing. And I don't think that they had this moral quandary about it like we see in the movie.
Yeah.
And also, this whole thing with her mowing the lawn in a bikini did happen. And I don't really like how the book explains it. The way it comes up in the book is it's talking about her relationship with the neighbor, Sharon in real life, Karen in the movie. And Sharon is talking about how when she first met Stacy, she was just extremely young. And one time she was mowing the lawn in a bikini top and all the neighbors were gawking at her. So Sharon kind of wanted to take her under her wing. And one of the things that she did to help her was say, you know, you really should start dressing more maturely, more quote unquote, like a mom. Again, I don't like this because I feel like a mom should be able to dress however they want.
Right.
But I think that the point was that this was one of the few times that Stacey really had a role model, another person she could confide in, kind of like a mother. So that's kind of where this whole story comes from.
Got it.
And in the next scene, we see that Stacey has gotten a call and she learns that her half-sister that acted as her guardian for a long time, her name is Lauren in the movie, it's Tina in real life, she has died of colon cancer. And while they're at the funeral, Stacey is very upset and she hugs the husband of her sister that has just died. Like, they're all trying to support each other. And Drew then starts accusing her of sleeping with her sister's husband.
I hate this. I hate it. She didn't even make it past 30.
That's kind of good for you, though, right? I saw the way you were touching Rick. And now you're sleeping with him. All those times you told me you were going to the hospital to see Lauren, I know you were sneaking off with him.
My sister's in that casket.
You see, you didn't deny it.
At this point, Stacey's ability to bounce back from the things that he said and did to her was no longer as strong. She was very affected by the death of her sister and very depressed. So this is where the physical abuse is going to get extremely bad. And in the movie, she's laying on the bed and he comes up and lays behind her. And you almost think that he's going to be consoling her. And then you hear him say,
I want to know how many times you banged him. Just tell me. Was it 5? 10?
God, stop.
You forget that I know that you're not the kind of girl that lets marriage stop you. You forget that I know what kind of whore you are.
And she's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And she's trying to get up, but he's on top of her and she can't get up. And she says,
I can't do this anymore. We're done, Drew. It's over.
Oh, you know you're not going anywhere.
Yeah. You're right. I'm not going anywhere. You are. You're moving out.
And then this is when Stacey makes a hint that if he does not let her leave this marriage, then she can make things very difficult for him.
I want you out. And if you don't go, I'm gonna make life very difficult for you. And I know you know exactly what I mean.
And we don't know at this point what that means, but you can see that this freaks Drew out because the next day in front of the kids, he tries to apologize to her.
I was an ass last night. An jealous, insecure ass.
Yes, you were.
I'm trying to say I'm sorry. I'm trying to make it better.
Okay, well, you can't make it better. Not anymore.
And when she rejects this apology, he tells her leaving is not going to be an option.
But I know how much you love these kids. You wouldn't break up our family over one stupid fight, are you?
One stupid fight, Drew?
You're upset. Your sister died. Just need a little time. You leaving is not an option.
In real life, after Stacey's sister dies, she's not only going to tell Drew that she wants to end things with him, she actually started looking for divorce attorneys.
And from here, we're going to go to Stacey meeting up with an old friend.
4 kids? Isn't that overkill?
No, I love being a mom. It's amazing being a mom. I just need to not be a wife anymore.
Okay, but why call me? I mean, we dated a really long time ago, and I'm not into the kid thing.
Don't flatter yourself. Not looking for a new guy. No, I don't know. I guess I just needed to talk to someone who knew me before. I used to be really brave, right?
And sure enough, while they're having lunch, Drew walks up on them and freaks out.
Is there a problem, officer?
Well, there's definitely a problem if you're sleeping with my wife.
Whoa, we're just having lunch here.
Stop, there's nothing romantic here, okay? He's just a friend.
Then why didn't you tell me about it?
I'll leave you two alone.
No, you should eat your lunch.
I'm not hungry.
I said you should eat your lunch.
You can't do that.
In the movie, we see that Drew pushes the guy down when the guy tries to get up, and the guy tells him, you can't do that, and Drew says,
who are you going to call? My wife should be able to go out, have a meal with a friend. So, eat up.
Which I thought was a good line in the movie, because that's really one of the main issues for all of Drew's wives, is that they feel like they can't call anyone because he is a police officer. And as we saw with Kathleen, when the police were called, sometimes it was her who got arrested. So it really gave a sense of helplessness.
And it also showed how it can be really hard for people to help people that they know are victims, because it's scary for them too. Like, it's not just scary for this one person. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't help people that you know are in dangerous situations, but it's certainly understandable when multiple people are scared of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. This incident and this guy is based on a true story. The guy's name in real life is Scott Rosetto. Their relationship was platonic, but when this happened, it really freaked this guy out, and he didn't want anything else to do with Stacy.
Yeah.
And in the movie, we see that Drew's going to take Stacy home from lunch in his squad car.
Our relationship is not going to work if you want to run around with other guys.
And she tells him it's over, and he says that he won't let it happen.
There is no relationship, Drew. I just told you we are done.
I'm the one who should be pissed off. You're running around with a guy in secret, and I'm willing to forgive and forget, but you gotta meet me halfway.
All I have to do is get a lawyer.
I'm not gonna let that happen. I'm not gonna lose my wife, my kids, and my house. I've worked too hard.
And from there, we see Stacy talking to Karen, and Karen's going to ask if she's okay.
Stacy, honey. Hey, are you okay? He won't leave. He's never going to leave. Honey. Hey, listen to me. Don't worry about him, okay? You can always leave.
He won't let me go. He'll kill me before he lets me go.
And when Karen tries to dig a little deeper, Stacy says that it doesn't matter.
Did he threaten you?
Doesn't matter. It does matter. Yes, it matters. You matter.
I'm already dead.
In the next scene, we're actually going to see Stacy go and talk to her pastor, the pastor of the church that she and Drew attended.
I really needed to speak with you, Pastor. I have to leave him. I have to end my marriage.
I want you and Drew to come in and talk to me together.
You don't understand. I'm terrified of him.
This guy was real, and Stacy would go and speak to him in a counseling sort of setting, and so would Drew, and sometimes they would go together. In this case, Stacy did actually go alone, and she's going to tell him some very important information, and people are not going to find out about it until much later. So just know that she has gone and talked to him. And then after that, we get to the moment where we are going to see that Stacy has apparently gone missing. Now, the movie is going to show this from the perspective of what Drew Peterson says happened, but I'm also going to try to incorporate in what her family says happened. So according to Drew, and as it's shown in the movie, they wake up in the morning and Stacy is planning to go to her sister's house to help her paint.
Where are you going?
I told Brianna I would help paint her new apartment. But if you're going to lose it, I'm not going to.
Why would I lose it? You should go.
And an argument ensues. And we specifically see that their kids hear them fighting. And so then after this, we're going to see Stacy's sister. And she's actually going over to the neighbor Karen's house. And she's asking, have you seen Stacy? Because she never showed up to paint with her.
Do you know where Stacy is?
No, but I've been wondering about her because she hadn't been answering her cell.
Yeah, no, I've been calling her all day and I'm worried out of my mind.
And Karen actually says the same thing. No, I have been texting and calling her and she hasn't been responding. And just as they do this, we see Drew Peterson pull up into the house. So they both decide to go over and confront him.
Where's Stacy? She didn't show up to paint with me today. She won't answer her phone.
What's going on, Drew?
She left me.
So she finally did it, huh?
She called me on the phone and she said that she was with a new guy and she was leaving.
And what Drew says to them is what he says in real life, that Stacy called him and said that she was leaving him for another guy. And at first they're like, oh, so she finally did it. Thank God. But then they hear that the kids are home.
She left without the kids. Stacy? Stacy?
Wait a minute. Stacy would not leave those kids behind. I know her. Those kids are everything to her. She wouldn't leave them behind.
That's what I would have thought. That's what she did. Now, I don't think she's coming back.
And when Drew confirms, like, yeah, the kids are still here. She left all of us. Just her. She's gone. They're like, no, Stacy would not leave her kids. She was a very close family person. Even when her brother was going through all of his trouble, she stuck by him. So there is no way she's leaving these four kids that she loves so much. Now, in real life, what happens is Stacy and her sister, whose real name is Cassandra, have been hanging out on Saturday. This is going to be October 27th. And that night before Stacy left, Cassandra told her, all right, call me tomorrow when you wake up and we can get together. And they were actually going to plan to paint. But what happens is Stacy never calls her at all during the next day. And Cassandra does try to call and text her several times with no response. And these two sisters were extremely close. They grew up together in that hellhole of a childhood. So they were the two people that they relied on. It was very unusual for her to not be answering. So then, very late at night on Sunday, October 28th, almost into the early morning of October 29th, Stacy's sister Cassandra goes over to the Peterson house and there are no cars in the driveway. And she goes up to knock on the door and one of the kids answers and she says, hey, what's going on? And the kid says, mom and dad had a fight earlier and mom left and dad went to go look for her. So she knows now that Stacy's been gone and she doesn't know where she is. In the movie, we're going to see that they call the police and the police come to Karen, the neighbor's house, and they're both talking to them and they make it seem like they really don't trust the police, primarily because Drew is one of the cops. And the police officer clarifies that he is not from the Bolingbrook Police Department. He is from the state police department. And so they have no bias whatsoever with regard to Drew Peterson.
I don't work with Bolingbrook. I'm a detective with the Illinois State Police. Prior to this morning, I've never even met Sergeant Peterson.
In real life, Cassandra goes from the house after she talks to the kid to the state police department, and she makes a report saying, I think my sister is missing. And this is about 24 hours of her being gone. And she starts explaining to them who she is and what's happened. And when she says, I think her husband, Drew Peterson, might have something to do with that, the cops immediately knew who he was. They remembered him from that narcotics undercover investigation that he almost got criminal charges for. And so they immediately put their eye on him and they get to work in their side of things to see what they can do. While they are doing that, Cassandra actually goes back to the Peterson house. This is early, early 3 a.m. on Monday, October 29th. And both of the cars are now at the house. And now Cassandra has a friend with her. And so they call Drew Peterson right at that time and they say, where is Stacy? And he starts rambling and he says that she called him saying that she was with another guy and that she was leaving. And he specifically says she took a bikini, she took a deed to the house, and she took $25,000.
And he also explains that the reason that he has both cars is because Stacy left her car at the airport and he went and got it.
In the movie, we do see the police talking to Drew Peterson, and he does not seem worried about her being missing at all. And this was also the case in real life. Pretty immediately, that next day after she was missing, they sent a team of state police over to Drew Peterson's house to talk to him. He essentially says the same thing that he says to Cassandra, Stacy's sister.
It's very early. She's only been missing 24 hours yet.
But she's not. She's on a beach somewhere with a new guy.
Maybe she'll do you a favor and call her sister sometime soon.
I wouldn't hold my breath. She likes seeing me squirm.
And the police do ask, hey, can we take a look around your house? And Drew actually says, you can, but please don't disturb anything. So they are able to look through the house, but they're not able to do a really deep search. They also ask him, can we look in your cars? And he allows them to look in his car, but he does not allow them to look in Stacy's car. So at this point in the movie, Karen is sobbing. She's at her own house with her husband, and she's like,
I love that girl so much. I really think she might be dead.
All right, sweetie, let's just hope you're wrong, okay? Just hope you're wrong.
Oh, God, I hope I'm wrong.
And it's from that point that a big search is going to take place.
Yeah. So in the movie, we see Stacy's sister is going to go talk to the local reporter, who in real life is Joseph Hosey.
This young lady says her sister disappeared under suspicious circumstances.
And she tells him that her sister's gone missing, says her sister's name, and then says she's married to Drew Peterson.
I just want to find out what happened to my sister.
So why are the circumstances suspicious?
I think her husband did something to her. She has four little kids. He said she left them, but I know she would never leave them.
And what's your sister's name?
Stacy Peterson. Her husband's Drew Peterson. He works for the police department in Bolingbrook.
Drew Peterson.
And the reporter remembers the name Drew Peterson because he remembers Kathleen's death.
The missing wife is the fourth wife.
Yeah.
The third wife?
Drowned in the dry bathtub, so they say. I even talked to Peterson at the last inquest.
He remembers Kathleen's death being weird, and he was there when Stacy and Drew were going into the police after finding Kathleen's body. So after this guy starts putting the pieces together, it's going to hit national media. And it's not clear if the media put it together that something weird might have happened with Kathleen's death, or if the DA noticed it and decided to reopen the case and then the media caught wind. But we are going to get more interest in Kathleen's death. In the movie, we will see Kathleen's sister actually come up to the media and say, "What about her? What about my sister?"
Stacy isn't the only wife of Drew Peterson you should be talking about. This is my sister Kathleen's death certificate, Drew's last wife. I've said all along that her death wasn't an accident, but did anybody listen to me?
No. Are you listening to me now? Ask yourself this question. Ask the police this question. Why do bad things keep happening to Drew Peterson's wives?
And that's how we're led to believe that authorities start to look into Kathleen's death again. And Drew's going to talk to this local reporter, Joseph Hosey. He won't talk to any of the national reporters at first, but he knows this guy. He's seen him before.
Drew doesn't want to talk to you.
I know, and I can't say that I blame him, but I've interviewed him before and I quoted him accurately. So if he wants to get his side of the story out.
I recognize you.
You feel like telling me what's up with your wife?
Why not?
And this is how Joseph Hosey ultimately gets his book. The reporter asked Drew where Stacy is, and he says the same thing as we were talking about before.
So where do you think your wife is, Drew?
On a beach somewhere? Getting laid. I don't know.
He's got crap luck for wives, I'll tell you that much.
You can say that. You know, where does she put the whisks? Oh.
I spoke with Stacy's sister.
I wouldn't do that. I mean, she's always hated me. She told Stacy that she'd regret marrying me.
And did she?
I guess she did at that.
And while Joseph Hosey is talking to Drew, we're actually going to see the state police come in with a search warrant for the home. In the movie, Drew takes the kids over to Karen's house.
State boys are searching my house. So I wondered if the kids could come here for a minute.
Absolutely. You boys come on in.
Thanks. Hey, kids, really take care of the little ones for a minute so I can have a little talk with Karen.
Yeah, there's some popsicles in the freezer. You boys can help yourself.
And Drew takes her into the bathroom so they can talk alone.
I thought we could talk in here without the kids. They've heard all of this yammer and they don't need it. Been a long time since I banged a girl in the bathroom. Sorry, I'm probably just trying to make light of things.
And Karen's like, okay, what's going on? Where's Stacy? And Drew just claims that he loves Stacy and wouldn't do anything to hurt her.
And I know that, you know, you and Stacy were, you know, talking, and I'm not going to deny that we didn't have a rough patch, but I love her.
This whole bathroom scene is really weird. Why is Drew in charge of where they're going to have this little alone talk? And why the hell would she agree to go into a bathroom? Like, the first thing I thought when they went into the bathroom was he can hit her against a wall and she will die.
Yeah.
But in real life, it didn't actually happen because the kids went to their older brother, Stephen.
Right. Karen in the movie is going to be the one who helps take care of the kids. But in real life, Drew's older son, Stephen, from his first marriage, is actually going to be the one who starts taking care of the kids and will ultimately become their guardian. After they're done talking in the bathroom, Karen goes out and sees one of the little boys, Justin, and she's trying to reassure him that it's going to be okay. The police are going to ask a lot of questions and really find out what's happening.
Oh, sweetie, I know you're worried about your mom. We all are. But don't you worry. The police are asking a lot of questions.
And they have Justin deliver this creepy line where he says,
"Nobody should talk to the police."
No, honey. No, listen to me. We should all talk to the police. All of us. Tell them everything you know.
I don't know if that happened in this particular case, but I do know that at the time that Kathleen was trying to file that protective order, apparently Drew was trying to coach the kids into saying certain things.
Yeah.
But we're ultimately going to get to a scene where Karen confronts Drew.
Look, Drew, Justin must have asked me about 20 times, where's mommy? Look, you got to tell those kids that Stacy's not coming back.
But I don't know that she's not coming back. I mean, she could get tired of hanging out with what's-his-face.
There is no what's-his-face, and you know it.
At this point, Karen's, like, really fed up with him.
You see, the problem is that you think that you know Stacy, but you only know the side she wants you to see. I mean, I caught her having lunch with some guy.
She had lunch with some guy? And she had to die for that? She had lunch with some guy and you made her disappear?
Hey, you watch your mouth.
No, because I am sick of going on with your little act. You and I both know that Stacy didn't run off with someone. You did something to her.
And then Drew tells her to get out. She's not going to see his kids ever again. Calls her a nasty bitch because obviously if you disagree with Drew and you're a woman. Yeah, and you're a woman, you're a nasty bitch.
Get the hell out of my house.
Don't you dare touch me. I will open that door and 50 reporters will hear me scream.
The true colors of a nasty bitch come out eventually. I hope you had fun visiting my kids. You're never going to see them again. Get out.
This didn't happen, but it just goes to show that Drew Peterson is a prick that hates women. Yeah. Then we're going to jump to a scene where we learn that Drew's stepbrother, in the movie his name is Glenn, remember in real life his name is Thomas Morphy, has attempted to commit suicide by overdose. And we see Drew going to the hospital to talk to him.
Glenn. You tried to kill yourself? You couldn't even get that right.
And it's a very weird, creepy scene where Drew is giving him some cryptic line about that he needs to be a man.
You know, you're like a chick. You got that little voice inside your head just yammering away, yammer. You got to tell it to shut up. Be a man. And a real man, he never folds. Ever.
In the movie, it seems like he's attempted to commit suicide a couple weeks after Stacy's disappearance. In real life, it was the day after Stacy disappeared. And the state police learn about Drew Peterson's stepbrother, Thomas, because they're contacted by the FBI. And they're told that Thomas Morphy is in a local hospital and that he has some very important information to share with them. So they go to him immediately. But I'm going to save what he told them exactly until a little later in the movie when it's revealed. And it's at this point the search for Stacy has really taken hold.
The search continues on foot, on horseback, even on all-terrain vehicles.
So we're looking for volunteers to help us search for Stacy. And we want people to put up these posters in their homes and businesses. We're also selling these bumper stickers, and people can buy them, and that's going to help us pay for the search efforts.
And in real life, this search was absolutely enormous. The police had never had a bigger search ever happen, and Drew Peterson just becomes a distraction from that because he comes out of his house, and the reporters immediately run to him wanting to know what's going on.
And starting tomorrow, people can meet us at the Westside Community Church. That's where we're going to have our staging area. And people. Here he goes again.
Park in front of your house, see how you guys like.
Do you plan on joining any searches to find her?
Wow, you are so hot. Isn't she hot?
Yeah, there are reporters outside the house every day, and Drew is just going to be a super weirdo for the cameras. He comes out in a hat, bandana, and sunglasses. He's laughing, and he's like calling reporters hot, and there's actual footage of him being like this, and it just is very uncomfortable. Yeah, even his defense attorneys said in other documentaries that when they saw him doing this before he had actually hired them, they were like, oh my God, this guy's an idiot, because the number one thing you tell to a client is do not freaking talk to anybody about
anything. And that's exactly what he was doing. Like, he could not resist. It's actually unbelievable how he was doing this. And we see Drew going up to the police department and he sees his old partner and he tells the partner that their boss wants to talk to him.
What are you doing here?
I got to talk to the captain. Yeah, maybe he wants my autograph. And become a media sensation now.
And the partner tips him off and says, hey, the DA has decided that they're going to exhume Kathleen Savio's body. Kathleen Savio was his old wife. And remember, when Stacy disappeared, this sparked new interest in Kathleen's accidental death case because people started thinking maybe it wasn't an accident.
State boys got a court order to exhume Kathleen. Do another autopsy on her.
Well, that's a job you don't want. Digging up that corpse. Been in the ground all this time.
Yeah, I think they ought to just let her rest in peace, you know?
I mean, this thing's getting out of hand.
And in the movie, Drew does not appear to be fazed by this. And honestly, we don't really know what he was thinking at the time. In real life, right when Drew Peterson is starting to be suspected for Stacy's disappearance, which was pretty immediately, he was put on leave from his work at the police department. And he actually worked enough years that he would have been able to retire and get his pension. But his boss fought that. He didn't want him to be able to retire and get that pension because he wanted to fire him. This sparked a little bit of controversy between the police department and Drew. Ultimately, they did let him retire and get that pension. He's later going to get that taken away, but that's way down the road. And with regards to this exhumation that they mentioned, this was actually an extremely big deal. It was ultimately the DA, Joseph Glasgow's decision to do the exhumation. They had not done one of these in 40 years. And we're going to see in the next scene that they're going to have another autopsy for her body, but they're also going to get pictures and photos from the original autopsy so that they can compare and see what they might have missed in that original autopsy. Ultimately, what this forensic examiner says is that this was not an accidental drowning in that tub.
The coroner's office just released a new autopsy on Kathleen Savio. They're saying that because of all the bruises on her body, she was the victim of a forced drowning, that she was murdered.
What he believes happened was this was a homicide by forced drowning. Specifically, Kathleen was drugged into the bathroom. Her head was put in the toilet where she was drowned, and then she was staged in the bathtub to make it look like an accident. And this isn't in the movie, but the medical examiner that looked at her noticed that there was a particularly big bruise around her middle where her diaphragm is, as if somebody had grabbed her from behind and was squeezing her. There was also that wound on her head from behind as if she had been hit. And one thing that he specifically said was, this wound was not caused by hitting her head on the bathtub. If she had hit her head on the bathtub, it would have been very obvious because there would have been blood on the bathtub. But in this case, there was no blood, even in photos, to be seen there. So she was hit with some other type of object.
And from there, we're going to switch gears and see Drew on this Chicago radio show.
WXIR, J in the AM, it's 825. Good morning, Chicago. Great to have you aboard. And hey, special guest in the studio, it's the notorious Drew Peterson, who got booted from the Bolingbrook Police Department last month.
Thanks, Jay.
The radio show host is so crass in this. I hate this scene so much.
How you doing now that the police have said maybe you've killed not only one wife, but maybe two?
Well, they're trying to make me sweat. And, you know, it's a game.
Now, would it be easier to just say you bumped off your wife than say she left you for another dude?
Well, but that's what happened. And Stacy was irrational and a basket case. Mm. She would ask me for a divorce every month around her menstrual cycle.
And then we have to get Drew Peterson bringing up women's menstrual cycles again.
This is number three, by the way. This is the third time he's mentioned women's periods.
And so we have these two misogynist guys kind of going back and forth, and they come up with the idea that they should do a win a date with Drew contest.
I am going to find you a woman that will stick around. In fact, let's call the contest win a date with Drew. What do you think?
That would be fine. I'd be up for that.
You're not worried about no one entering the contest? Because let's face it, all your wives don't have any luck in the longevity department.
Well, if they get with me, they're going to get lucky.
Ooh.
As long as they're hot.
I'm not sure if we could find anybody hot on the radio, but...
Tell you what, the phone lines are burning up right now. Let's take some calls. Let's find you a date here, okay?
This discussion actually did happen on a Chicago radio show.
Yeah. In real life, after Drew Peterson hired this lawyer, he told the lawyer, hey, I want to go on do some interviews and stuff. And specifically, he told him he wanted to go on this radio show. And the lawyer said, okay, you cannot talk about the case, but sure, why not? Which is so dumb, because then they go on this radio show and the lawyer and Drew Peterson are in the studio when they're having this interview. And it is actually their idea to have this win a date with Drew bit.
Yeah, which is obviously revolting. The public hates him after this. And the radio station is like, no, we were never going to do this. But obviously it blows up big in the media because this is so gross.
And I mean, for them saying they weren't going to do it, you can hear recordings of them all talking. And the host is like, yeah, I'll totally do it. If your lawyer says you can do it, I'm totally down. So everyone in that whole situation sucked.
Yeah. And from there, we're going to go to Drew hanging out with his neighbor and the reporter, Joseph Hosey. And they're at a bar. And Joseph Hosey said that in real life, Drew would always like pressure him to go out. He wanted to go drinking with them. But the reporter did not want to be seen having beers with him. So they never hung out like this together. But in the movie, Drew's going to go hit on a young woman. And we get this line from the neighbor that he thinks Drew can really hone in on who might be vulnerable to his charms.
He likes them young, doesn't he?
And they go for him too, man. He studies their body language. He can tell when a girl's insecure. He picks the ones that grew up in messed up situations and are all desperate for security.
And I'd believe that based on his track record with women and all of their backgrounds growing up. And when he comes back, he says,
I think I may have found wife number five.
From here, we're going to meet Drew's fifth fiance.
Just months after the disappearance of his last wife, Drew Peterson has announced to the world that he is engaged to be married again to single mother Chloe Roberts. Peterson invited cameras inside his home to meet his new fiance.
She is 23 years old, which is the same age as Stacy was when she went missing. And she claims that he would never hurt anyone. And so she's going to go ahead and move in with him.
When asked about the cloud of suspicion hanging over her new fiance, Ms. Roberts expressed disbelief in the allegations.
No, I don't think he hurt Stacy. I know him. He's a good dad. He's got a real good heart. And he never hurt anyone.
So you feel safe with him?
Yes, of course. I'm moving in with him this weekend.
In the movie, we get this scene where Karen's putting up a huge Where Stacy sign in her yard, like as Chloe's moving in. And I do love this scene. And I love that the real neighbor, Sharon, she actually did have this huge Where Stacy sign in her yard.
Why is she doing that?
Don't pay any attention to her. She's nuts.
I sure hope I don't have to put up a sign for you one day.
Don't talk to my girlfriend. Stay out of my life.
I'm in your life until the world finds out what happened to Stacy. So get used to it.
From there in the movie, we're going to see Karen go talk to Stacy's pastor.
I know Stacy used to come here. She used to say the nicest things about you. Look, I was thinking that you might want to sponsor a fundraiser. We still do searches for her every Saturday. Media is not interested in Stacy anymore. You know, all they want to talk about is Drew and his new girlfriend.
Yes, I saw that. Very disturbing.
But the pastor says that something's weighing on him.
Stacy confided in me something about her husband. And it's weighing very heavily on me what to do. Whether to go to the police.
And basically, the pastor reveals to the neighbor that Stacy told the pastor that the night of Kathleen's murder, Stacy woke up and Drew wasn't there.
It was Drew's night off. We went to bed together, but when I woke up in the middle of the night, he was gone. I heard him come in, so I went downstairs to see, and he was putting clothes in the wash. He never did laundry. Never.
And just to avoid confusion, keep in mind that as the pastor is telling Karen this, we're seeing flashbacks of Stacy talking to him, but she is still missing at this point.
When they found Kathleen's body, I asked him where he had been that night, and he said, you know exactly where I was. I was so upset. But then the autopsy came back an accident. accident. I thought, oh, thank God.
And now she realizes that it was not an accident, and she thinks she helped him get away with it, and she was scared that Drew was going to kill her.
And the thing with this is days before she disappears.
It wasn't an accident. Drew killed Kathleen. And I think I helped him get away with it. And now I think he's gonna kill me.
And remember, earlier in the movie, we saw Stacy appear very stressed out before she went and talked to the police. And she told them at the time she was pregnant, but now it kind of makes more sense why she would have been so worried talking to them. Also, they had the incident where Stacy told Drew when she was trying to leave him that she could make things very difficult for him. So that stuff is starting to add up now.
Right.
And in real life, this pastor was much, much younger than how they portray him in the movie. And I think as a result, he was maybe a little naive. Stacy called him and she said, I really need to talk to you. So they met at a Starbucks. And he said that Stacy was visibly terrified the entire time he was talking to her. And she didn't want to say what she knew. Basically, what she said was what you said initially, that she went to sleep and Drew was with her, then woke up and he was not with her, and then came in with all this laundry. She never actually outright said, I think I helped him get away with something, even though they say that in the movie. But yeah, her demeanor and her fear from all of that, it was clear that that's what she was talking about. And she also said that she looked at the clothes that Drew put in the laundry, and it was women's clothes that were not hers. And then the next day was when all of the information came out that Kathleen Savio was missing.
Yeah.
And also, after he did this and put the stuff in the laundry, he brought Stacy downstairs. He didn't let her go back to sleep. And he said, there's going to be some reports in the news tomorrow, and I'm going to have to go talk to the police. I need you to tell them that I was with you all night. And she tells this to the pastor. So that's how they connect, that Stacy knows that he had something to do with this.
Got it. Yeah. And in the first 48 episode with Marcia Clark that I watched, she kind of asks him why he didn't do anything immediately after Stacy told him this. And he said that he was worried that anything he would do would hasten her demise. And I mean, I can't imagine being in this pastor's position, but I think, like you said, he was a little naive, and he was just paralyzed by fear. He didn't want to make it worse, and he really didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I heard that too. And I also heard that when he spoke to Stacy, she made it very clear that she didn't want him doing anything. She just wanted to tell him this. That's what he says. I think if he could go back and make a different decision, like getting her some help, getting her into a place, he would. But that's just what he did at the time, and he can't change that, unfortunately.
Right. And in the movie, the pastor is going to go on a national news show and do an interview with this information. It's at this point that Chloe, Drew's fifth fiance, actually decides to leave him and says that everyone she knows thinks she's pathetic and stupid.
Chloe. Chloe, come on. All the things they say about me. All of the things. And you're going to let this one thing bother you.
I can't deal with it anymore.
You gotta ignore it. It's part of a game.
I don't want to play this game anymore. I told you I didn't want to go on TV, and you made me do it.
And in real life, they broke off the engagement, but they remained close after the fact. And unbeknownst to her, until years later, he was actually cheating on her as well with another woman.
So insane.
Yeah.
From there in the movie, we get the scene that has the line that they've been waiting to deliver all movie. So Karen is in her house and she hears her garage door going up and down, and she goes outside and Drew's standing outside on her driveway with a garage door opener.
Where'd you get that opener? Give it back to me.
And she asks him to give it back. He's not going to give it back.
Fine, I'll just change the code tomorrow.
Do you think that would stop me?
Going to prison is going to stop you.
And he delivers this line where he says,
I'm not going anywhere. I'm untouchable, bitch.
And in real life, Sharon had given a garage door opener to Stacy, and Drew did take it, but it was the middle of the day. It wasn't nighttime and like lurking, as scary as this scene was. But still, he shouldn't have had her garage door opener, and he was definitely trying to intimidate her.
Oh, I hate him.
From there, Drew's going to continue his media tour and go on Larry King Live, which actually happened in real life.
We welcome to Larry King Live here in Los Angeles Drew Peterson, who is a suspect in the disappearance of his fourth wife, Stacy, and still a question mark over the death of his third wife. Why'd you come here, Drew?
I wanted to talk to you and maybe clear up some
misconceptions in the public.
He claims that if the public knew him, they'd know that there was no way that he'd be involved with any crime.
A lot of people believe that Stacy is dead.
Think she might be alive?
I do.
Drew, you're a bright guy. You begin to think that, the public might say that if it looks like a duck and it acts like a duck, it might be a duck.
Well, they don't have all of the duck's information, because if they knew the facts about me, they would know that there's no way that I could be involved in any crime.
And the part that I find the most cringy in this, to be honest, is Larry King freaking says, go to the website and vote if you think she's dead or not.
Head to CNN.com/Larry King and weigh in. Do you think Stacy Peterson is dead? We'll be back after the break.
And they actually did have a Stacy Peterson quick vote on his website. I couldn't see what the actual question was, but you can see the transcripts from the interview. It says, and then we have a Stacy Peterson quick vote on the website. So check that out. And I just find that so appalling.
That's fucking ridiculous. Like, I don't know. I want her story put out there, but I hate that they interview him. Like, obviously they're going to do it, but it bothers me so much. He's such a fucking prick. I hate him so fucking much. Anyway, so from there, we are going to get a scene where we see Drew on the phone with his stepbrother, Glenn. Now, Glenn, if you remember, was the guy that was in the hospital. He had tried to take his own life. The real guy's name is Thomas Morphy. And we hear Drew saying,
Glenn, come on, you got to start answering your phone. I can't have you out there losing your little mind again. All right? And I don't want you talking to those state police guys. They're idiots. Okay? We're going to bungle this, and there's no reason to talk to them. So call me, and remember, we're family.
And in the movie, we see that Karen is next door, and she's hidden in her front yard. Drew doesn't see her. And the second she hears him say that over the phone, and she knows he's talking to Glenn, she calls the cops and says, you need to talk to this guy. Mm-hmm. This is not what really happened. And we kind of touched on this. It was actually the FBI that got in touch with the police after Glenn was in the hospital and said, you need to talk to him. And essentially what it is one day Glenn gets a call from Drew and he's saying, I need to meet you now. There is something really, really important. So they met up at a Starbucks and Drew tells Glenn that he is convinced that Stacy is cheating on him and he needs to take care of it. Now, at the time, Glenn thinks that Drew is saying that he wants to kill this guy that Stacy is dating or whatever, cheating on him with, mm-hmm. which is terrifying in and of itself that this just did not faze him. He just thought, oh, I just thought he wanted to kill this boyfriend.
Right. Just this guy.
Yeah. So he's like, I need you to help me with something. And so then what they do is Drew takes him to this park and he says, I need you to stay here. And he gives him his phone.
This is my phone. I want you to hold on to it, but I do not want you to answer it. All right.
So Drew is giving Glenn his phone and he says, if this rings, do not answer it. And Drew leaves. And Glenn is just at this park for like 30 minutes by himself. And while he's there, he gets a call and the caller ID on Drew's phone that Glenn is holding says Stacy Peterson. So it's like Stacy calling him, but he knows he's not supposed to answer. So he doesn't. And then Drew comes back and picks him up. And then after that, he says, I need help with one more thing.
I want you to help me move something.
So then Drew takes Glenn to their house and they go upstairs into Drew and Stacy's master bedroom. And nobody is there at this point. And up in the master bedroom is this huge blue tub, like a giant tub that would maybe hold chemicals in it. And Drew just says, I need you to help me take this down and put it in my car. And Glenn said that the tub was warm to the touch. It was never opened in front of him. He never saw what was in it. But Drew was very paranoid about not letting it spill, not letting it open up. So they get this huge tub down the stairs and they put it into Drew's car. And then they both get back in the car and Drew takes Glenn home. And that's when Glenn gets out of the car and Drew leaves and he never sees the blue tub ever again. And it's very quickly after that that Stacy disappears. And he thinks, oh my God, I've just helped him hide a body. Mm-hmm. And this is when he freaks out to the point that he's having suicidal thoughts. And he had a friend and his girlfriend were both saying, you need to go to the FBI and tell them this. So then he is helped and contacts the FBI. Now, this is not an FBI case. A murder is going to be a state related case. So he actually needed to go to the state police. But the friends just thought he needed to go to the FBI. So that's when the FBI calls the local police and says, you need to talk to him. He's got really important information. information. And so the police do, in fact, talk to him. And I wanted to clarify the reason that Glenn was holding Drew's phone and he saw that Stacy called is they believe that Drew called with Stacy's phone and he was doing this to make it seem like Stacy ran away with somebody. Remember the guy that she went to lunch with and Drew intimidated him? Mm-hmm. He knew the area where he lived and he went over to that area with Stacy's phone. And if he called his own phone, then it was going to make it seem like she was over there with him, which would help in saying that she ran away with somebody.
Got it.
And in the movie, we get a series of scenes of all of this being acted out. And right. Even though this is basically like the nail in the coffin, there's a big problem because we don't have a body for evidence purposes for a trial. And it's very difficult to have a murder trial without a body because we don't know how he killed her. And we don't know where that big blue tub went. And you can try to have a murder trial without a body. But if he's found not guilty and then later down the road, they do find a body, they cannot charge him again. It's double jeopardy. So this makes a major wall in the case for Stacy Peterson. And it's essentially been at a standstill because of that to this day. Now, they think that it's possible that Drew might have taken it to this canal outside of the area where they live because they took Drew's cell phone and they did see that he made a call near this canal. And this would be a place that you could very much put that tub into and it would not ever be found. As of 2021, her sister is still searching this canal for that tub and her remains. She believes that it's there, and she actually made a press conference where she said that a professional used this sonar technology, and they believe that they found the remains of her. But the police, for whatever reason, are choosing not to use that information she has, and there could be a million reasons why.
Yeah.
But we still have the issue of Kathleen's murder, and Stacy's going to actually become a big part of the trial. And at this point in the movie, we see that the police finally have enough evidence, they believe, to indict Drew Peterson and arrest him on the murder of Kathleen.
And the way we see this in the movie is Drew is telling his kids that he's going to go buy some luggage because he's headed to Vegas and he's becoming a TV star.
Zach, yeah, I need you to watch the gang. I got to go buy some luggage. Daddy's headed to Vegas to be a TV star.
I thought you were already a TV star.
Well, I'm a media sensation, but there's no money in that. You're only a star when they pay you to be on TV.
And he gets in his car. All the reporters are following him.
You're wasting your time, guys. Not leaving for Vegas until tomorrow.
And the police stop him and they place him under arrest. And they really did stop him in a traffic stop. So that was pretty similar to what happened. And even when they arrested him, he was still gawking at the cameras.
Drew Peterson, I have a warrant for your arrest for the murder of Kathleen Savio.
I guess I should have returned those library books.
Hey, Drew!
Guys, make sure you get my good side. Have a look at my new bling.
You have the right to remain silent.
And then the weirdest fucking moment in this whole movie happens. And I don't know why Lifetime did this. I don't know why. It didn't happen. So I don't know what the hell they were thinking. But basically, they bring Drew Peterson in to process him because he's now been arrested. It's the state police. And they tell him, all right, you need to take all your clothes off. And they give him a jumpsuit that he can wear while he's in the county jail waiting for his trial.
You know the drill, Mr. Peterson? Strip.
See, now I get it. You just want to have a look at my package. Well, I can make that happen. No problem.
And Drew Peterson slash Rob Lowe starts doing a striptease, like taking off a shirt and swinging it around. And we fade to black. And I was so confused because this is so weird in the movie. But also one of our listeners, I had emailed her because she had won one of our giveaways. And she goes, oh, hey, I saw that y'all were doing Drew Peterson Untouchable. Is that that movie where Rob Lowe does a striptease? And I was like, well, I haven't seen the movie, but isn't this about a guy killing his wife? Maybe I'm thinking of the wrong movie. But sure enough, there it is. I stand corrected. So this is how the movie ends. And then we get some on-screen text. It says, Drew Peterson continues to maintain his innocence while awaiting trial for the murder of his third wife, Kathleen Savio. His fourth wife, Stacy Peterson, has never been found. He is still looking for wife number five.
Now, there are updates to this. After Drew is arrested for the murder of Kathleen Savio, there are actually several pretrial hearings that take place before the actual trial that had a big impact on how the trial went. One thing was the prosecutors really, really wanted to get in statements by both Kathleen and Stacey Peterson talking about Drew and things that they said before they died. And obviously, the defense is going to fight against this because this is hearsay. And the word hearsay is thrown around a lot. I don't know if everybody really knows what it means. Hearsay is an out-of-court statement made for the truth of the matter asserted. So basically what this means is their statements cannot be said in court by another person who may have heard them. Now, there are some exceptions to this. And just before Drew was arrested, there was a law actually put into place called Drew's Law. And I'm not sure if they named that subsequently as a nickname or if it was actually called that. But essentially, this was a statute saying that if there was a person that was a victim of domestic violence, and because of that, were not available to testify, either because they're missing or they're dead or they can't be found, their statements can be said by another person. And a lot of people think that this law was the reason that Stacey and Kathleen's statements are ultimately going to be able to get in. They're actually not. Drew's law was more protective of Drew, but there's common law called forfeiture by wrongdoing, which essentially states this exact same thing, but it's more expansive. And that saved their statements because originally the trial court said, no, we can't use their statements. They don't get to go in. The prosecutors appealed this and the appellate court said that their statements could go in. However, the jury cannot know that Stacey is missing, that there's an investigation that Stacey is missing, and that Drew is a suspect because it can be more prejudicial than probative. So by the time we get to trial starting, this has all happened. The jury cannot know Stacey has disappeared, but they can use her statements and they can use some of Kathleen's statements. And the people that are called include people that testify about the amount of property and money at stake in their divorce and how that could have been a motive for Drew to murder Kathleen. They call a couple of Kathleen's friends that talk about how Drew was violent and abusive towards her. And the last person that the state calls is actually the pastor we heard from earlier. And they used Stacey Peterson's statements at that time, talking about how she lied about Drew Peterson's alibi when Kathleen was murdered. Now, the defense is going to try to fight this by basically going after Kathleen and Stacey's character. And one of the things that they're going to do about this pastor statement, which is really, really damning to Drew Peterson, is they're going to say that at the time that Stacey said this, she was planning to divorce Drew and she was going around saying all this bad stuff about him in order to hopefully get more money in this divorce. So they call this lawyer, and it is the lawyer that Stacey Peterson went to a few days before she disappeared about possibly being her divorce lawyer. And just out of complete coincidence, this also happened to be Kathleen Savio's divorce attorney as well. And they bring this guy up onto the stand and they want him to talk about how Stacey was really gunning for getting more money in this divorce. And they ask if she had any concerns about getting more money. And this lawyer was very smart. He was a former prosecutor. And when they said that, he said, actually, Stacey did mention something about getting more money. She asked me if I can tell the police how Drew Peterson killed Kathleen. Do you think I can get more money in this divorce? And it's very important to note, he didn't say if I can tell them that he did kill her, but more how he killed her. Like, she had more detail than just making a blank statement that he killed her. And when she said that, that basically confirmed to this jury that she knew information about how Kathleen was killed. And she did actually lie about that alibi before. And the defense attorneys were later interviewed. And one of them was like, that was the biggest disaster. Actually, in Marcia Clark's podcast, she says that's probably the biggest trial mistake she's ever seen, which to me, I was like, are you sure you want to be saying that, Marcia? You don't want to be saying that. But ultimately, after that, the jury deliberates for a day. And then they find Drew Peterson guilty of the murder of Kathleen Savio. He's sentenced to 38 years. You can Google his sentencing hearing and he absolutely loses it. He yells at the prosecutor. He yells at the judge and then he's taken away. But we're not even done with him because Drew Peterson is going to get some more charges while he's in prison.
Yeah. So on February 9th, 2015, Drew Peterson is actually charged for soliciting the murder of James Glasgow, who was the prosecutor in Kathleen Savio's murder case. And what happened was Peterson solicited another inmate while he's in jail for killing Kathleen to murder Glasgow, the prosecutor, for $10,000. The other inmate is smart and he writes a letter to the DA and he tells him about Peterson's murder for hire plot. So they give this guy a wire and they catch it all on this listening device, Peterson telling the whole scheme.
Sometimes having jailhouse snitches as your witnesses can go horribly wrong, but sometimes it's perfect.
Yeah. So ultimately, Peterson is going to be convicted of murder for hire and sentenced to another 40 years in prison to be served back to back with his sentence for Kathleen's murder. So that means that it's not concurrent. He can't get out in just 40. It has to be 80. Eventually, he's going to appeal this conviction, but on December 11th, 2020, the appellate court denied Drew Peterson's appeal.
Yeah. So now the earliest that Drew Peterson can be released is 2081, and we actually don't know where he is in prison. He is somewhere in a prison facility, but he kept getting so many threats, they had to put him in an undisclosed location. Now, getting into the reactions to the movie, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised by this, but this movie was highly anticipated at the time that it premiered on Lifetime. It drew in 5.8 million viewers on the Saturday that it was released, but most of the reviews were mixed to negative. Almost all of the reviews that I read, including the ones that were more positive, questioned the casting of Rob Lowe and really questioned the makeup done on him. There was at least one comment about his mustache in every single review. And all reviews I read hated Rob Lowe's accent, and they could not decide what type of bad impression he was doing. They were like, this is not a Chicago accent. This is like Minnesota. What is happening? They really, really hated it. And to be honest, Drew Peterson did not talk like that. So, yeah. I mean, they're not wrong. Ultimately, I think the consensus among the negative reviews of this movie is best summed up by Richard Roper in an article he wrote for the Chicago Tribune about the movie, which is that despite having pretty good actresses portraying both Kathleen Savio and Stacey Peterson and even the neighbor, there's not a moment in the movie that conveys the real sense of terror that Drew Peterson brought upon them. And I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. As far as awards go, unfortunately, there are none for this fine film. But I do have some reactions and updates about people that were featured in the movie. Drew was actually able to watch the movie while he was in jail. He was still awaiting trial. His lawyer was actually able to get an advanced copy of it, and he brought the movie for him. He was able to sit in a room by himself and watch it. It's reported that he chuckled several times during the film, and then when the movie was over, Peterson was reported to have said that it was hysterical. He also made a statement through his attorney saying that it was laughable and full of mistakes, and that if I was ever portrayed in a movie, I was hoping I would be portrayed by Denzel Washington. But I guess Rob Lowe is okay. Peterson's attorney, Joel Brodsky, said that he did not think that the movie would influence the trial. And anybody who believes something that happens in a Lifetime movie is actual fact should not be on a jury anyway. Which is true. That is a rule that even if someone had seen that movie and they were going to be on this jury, they would have to say in court that it would not persuade their ability to be a fair and impartial juror. Now, both Kathleen Savio's family and Stacey Peterson's family were very upset when they first heard that Lifetime was going to make this movie. The Peterson family was upset that they weren't ever consulted about the movie, and they also were upset that none of the proceeds would go to the search for Stacey or the fight against domestic abuse. Fair. Kathleen Savio's family was really disturbed. Her brother actually said that they found out a couple of days after Kathleen's birthday. So instead of having some time to remember Kathleen for the good person she was, they were told that this movie was going to be made. And in their minds, it automatically meant that more press and publicity was going to be put on Drew Peterson. And that's all he had been doing since Kathleen's death, was being this circus show for the media.
Right.
Kathleen Savio's family also seemed to be really worried that this movie was going to be problematic for the murder trial that was coming up for the death of Kathleen. Her brother specifically said he realized he was powerless over whether or not Lifetime released this movie, but if he had a choice, he would prefer that they release it after the trial happened. They said that the most important point was that Drew Peterson be found guilty and that he rot in jail.
Yeah.
Once the movie did premiere, however, it seemed like at least some of the family members of Stacey and Kathleen were more open to the movie being released and watching it. Stacey Peterson's family actually had a private viewing party at the hotel where Drew Peterson and Stacey met initially. And they said that they saw the movie as a benefit to Stacey Peterson, putting her back in the spotlight and possibly allowing for more information to come to light after people saw the movie. I did not find any reports saying if the Savio family watched the movie together or anything like that. But there was one local news channel report where they talked to the niece of Kathleen Savio, and she indicated that she did plan to watch it. And she said something very similar to the Peterson family. She saw the movie as a benefit to bringing light to what happened to Kathleen Savio. The pastor that we saw featured in the movie did watch and then promptly did an interview with a local news channel, even though he was going to be a witness at the trial. And a few reporters tried to contact Sharon, the neighbor who was portrayed as Karen in the movie, about what she thought, but she was done at that point. She did not make any comments. And I was going to give an update on the kids of both Kathleen Savio and Stacey Peterson that were in with all of this, but I don't know. This wasn't their fault, and I don't really want to bug into their business, but I will say that none of his sons walked in on him having sex with his wife. So I was glad to hear that. And that is the story of Drew Peterson, Untouchable.
Yep. And if you catch our mini-sode next time, we'll have some behind-the-scenes fun facts that bring a little levity to our episodes, since this has been heavy, but important to tell the whole story.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, this guy's a dick. I can't do it anymore. Okay. What are we doing next week, Grace? Or no, wait, we don't have a next week.
It's the end of season one.
I would say, what are we doing next time, Grace? But we don't have a next time for a little bit. It's not long, and we will be back with a whole new season. There will still be a mini-sode next week. And that is all for now. We love you guys. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Like what you hear on the show? Then we would greatly appreciate it if you could help us spread the word about Crime Scenes, a true crime movie podcast, by giving us a 5-star rating and positive review on Apple Podcasts. We also love taking movie requests from our listeners. If you would like to make a request, you can do so by sending us a DM through any of our social media accounts. We are at Crime Scenes Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can also make a request on our website, crimescenespodcast.com. And while you're on our website, you can also browse through our merch store and even show us some love and support by clicking the link to our Buy Me a Coffee page and making a donation. Again, that's crimescenespodcast.com. We love you guys, and thank you for listening to Crime Scenes, a true crime movie podcast. All right, round two. I think they just wanted to show Kaylee Cuoco's abs, which are fantastic.
Yeah, she has really good abs.
So now there are updates to... Fuck. So if I said I love movies, and I'm saying that because I'm trying to give you the information that I love movies, and I said it in court, it can go in. Never mind, I'm not even good at that part. I'm just going to say, that was dumb. That was fucking dumb. I don't know why we needed that.